Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Doug Podell. Until next time, you guys remember to rock till you drop, and I'll see you.
On June 24th, you've got the best seat in the house for the hottest ticket on television. The BET Awards 08, starring Alicia Keys, Chris Brown, Lil Wayne, Nelly, Usher, Plus, Kanye West, Neo, Jeezy, Rihanna, Ashanti, Jill Scott, Marvin Sapp, all hosted by D.L. Hughley. The BET Awards 08 Live, Tuesday, June 24th at 8, 7 Central. Go to BET.com for more action. This summer, read the book that will change vacations forever.
We're taking on water, and it's trying to kill us.
James Patterson's Sail, the most thrilling story of the summer.
Please, is there anyone out there? I can't, no, you stay away from her.
One family lost at sea, found by a killer. James Patterson's Sail.
Are we into the Olympics? Are you kidding? This is America. We high-five after meetings. We cheer when delayed planes land. So you better believe we're going to go nuts for our Olympic athletes. At americascheer.com, hosted by Bank of America, you can send videos, photos, and texts directly to our Olympic team. Let them know you're out there. americascheer.com. If you cheer, they'll hear. This is America. Don't you belong at Bank of America? Bank of Opportunity. Member FDIC.
Now, our feature presentation.
I can lead a nation with a microphone, with a microphone, with a microphone.
Oh, yeah?
And I can split the atoms of a molecule, of a molecule, oh, of a molecule.
Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome to another Sunday night broadcast on WRIF in Detroit. We're broadcasting, of course, all around the metropolitan Detroit area, into Ohio, into Ontario, so we have an international show, and certainly an international show. Oh, you want me to introduce you? But wait, I gotta get to my little shtick, so hold on. And by the internet, of course, all around the world and all around this country as well. Welcome, everyone. This is Peter Hussein Werby, and joining me is Jalene Hussein Jordan.
Hello.
Yeah.
Thank you for getting my full name.
Yeah. Right. So people are wondering, what the hell are they talking about? Here's the deal. I don't even know if I've mentioned this on the air because I didn't want to give credence to these right-wing creeps that rather than dealing with the issues in the presidential election coming, they're trying to smear Barack Obama by using his name. In some ways, you could say they can't really smear him because Barack Obama's name is Barack Hussein Obama.
Yeah, and yeah, we had a caller last week who used that, and we tore him up pretty good.
Isn't he a Muslim?
Yeah, right. As if that's bad begin with.
Yeah. And so I just heard the most wonderful story. I shouldn't say I heard it. I read about it in the New York Times today. And if you'll permit me, I'm just going to read a little bit of it. It is very, very heartening because one of the things that's happened in the past, people have taken names, for instance, or insults and turned them around and made them positive. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think of a couple. One, of course, was sometimes people called gay people were queers. Mm-hmm. Now, the most radical gay people call themselves queers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they've taken that. But there's a political party in the United States. I don't know if it was the Whigs, W-H-I-G. Or something. Some of you emailers, let me know. But people have done that in the past. You can email me always at calltalkyes@yahoo.com when the phone lines are filled or if you're bashful. 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743. And don't be bashful.
No. And here is the deal with Peter Hussein Werby and Jalene Hussein Jordan. Emily Nordling has never met. Well, the headline is Obama supporters take his name as their own. Emily Nordling has never met a Muslim, at least not to her knowledge. But this spring, Ms. Nordling, a 19-year-old student from Fort Thomas, Kentucky, gave herself a new middle name on Facebook.com, mimicking her boyfriend and shocking her father. Emily Hussein Nordling, her entry now reads. With her decision, she joined a growing band of supporters of Senator Barack Obama, the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, who are expressing solidarity with him by informally adopting his middle name. The result is a group of unlikely-sounding Husseins, Jewish and Catholic, Hispanic and Asian, and Italian-American, from Jamie Hussein Alvarez of Washington, D.C., to Kelly Hussein Crowley of Norman, Oklahoma, to Sarah Beth Hussein Frumkin of Chicago. And Jeff Strabone of Brooklyn now signs credit card receipts with his newly assumed middle name, while Dan O'Malley of Washington jiggered his email account so his name would appear as D. Hussein O'Malley. Alexander Enderle made the switch online along with several other Obama volunteers from Columbus, Ohio, and now friends greet him in that way as well. Senator Obama is not a Christian. He's a Christian, not a Muslim. And Hussein is a family name inherited from a Kenyan father he barely knew, who was born a Muslim and died an atheist. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that till right now. No.
But the name has become a liability. Well, why has it become a liability? I'm not reading now. It's because these right-wing creeps think that they can fool people, scare people, that they won't have to talk about issues.
Yeah.
There won't be a debate with John McShane, whose political policies are identical to the disastrous failed ones of George W. Bush on everything from the war to taxes to the economy and everything under the sun. Let's see. Some critics on cable television shows dwell on it, while others on blogs or in emails use it to falsely assert that Mr. Obama is a Muslim or, more fantastically, a terrorist. And Mr. Strabone said, I'm sick of Republicans pronouncing Barack Obama's name like it was some sort of cuss word. He wrote a manifesto called We Are All Hussein. Now, that's pretty interesting because what that does, it comes from the 1960 movie with, Kirk Douglas. Very cool movie. He's
Spartacus?
Spartacus. Oh, I didn't say that. Right. I'm reading it. But a Roman slave whose peers protect him by calling out, I am Spartacus, to Roman soldiers. Also, there was a 1997 comedy called In and Out. It was about a gay high school teacher whose students protest his firing by proclaiming that they're all gay as well.
Oh, I've seen that.
Really?
Yeah.
Stephanie Miller, who we love, morning talk show host, as a left-wing talk. A morning talk show. She says it's one of those things that just takes off because everybody got it right away. She said she blurted it out one day during a broadcast on her syndicated radio talk show and then repeated it on CNN. A search revealed hundreds of participants across the country, along with a YouTube video and bumper stickers promoting the idea of people taking the middle name Hussein. Legally changing names is much too much hassle, so they use Hussein on Facebook and in blog posts and comments on sites like New York Times, Daily Kos. If you don't ever check that out, dailykos.com, mybarackobama.com. That's weird.
Oh, this is really catching on.
Yeah. Now, I'm not a terrific fan. I'm not a terrific fan of Barack Obama. I mean, he's too far to the center for me.
Yeah.
But, wait a minute. We may have, let's see. Here. I do have a place for it. Thank you, Al. This is from the movie Spartacus. Let's see here.
I'm Spartacus.
I'm Spartacus!
Actually, very moving, sort of a... I wonder if Charlton Heston is in that one, too. Wasn't he in all those?
I don't know.
Well, yeah. But, that's great. So, I'm Hussein.
I'm Hussein.
Yeah, and you can be Hussein as well if you call 313-298-WRIF. If you don't care to play the game, still call, and you can just use your own name. But the big story this week...
Happiness is a warm gun. Happiness
Beatles, of course. Happiness is a warm gun, and sometimes when we played that in the past, generally people say, that's about heroin. It's not about actually about guns. And I don't mean that in any particular way. You can either take that as a parody of the gun nuts, and, man, they're out there. I don't mean the people that go out and shoot people, but people that are obsessed with firearms. And I've even known a couple guys like that.
Oh, you know? Yeah, it's a big rush to shoot.
Yeah, and they showed some protest. Well, I don't know. They were protesting since the Supreme Court this week held that the Second Amendment applied to the individual right to own and possess handguns. Hey, by the way,
for non-military uses, it says.
Yeah, I have all the phones on hold, and I'll tell you why in a second. So if you're trying to call, don't do it. That's pretty odd. Usually we tell you call 313.
Well, we just did.
298
like 5 minutes ago.
But I don't want to start arguing about guns. I don't want to start arguing about the meaning of the Second Amendment, because if the founding fathers, in their wisdom, would have either just where is that baby? Would have just said it either like this. If they would have said, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, then, you know, case closed. But or they would have just said, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state cannot be suppressed, or something like that. But they kind of mucked everything up, and there's always been this incredible debate. And I think the debate is actually, I don't think we can even engage it, because you've probably heard it 100 times. Mm-hmm. There's somebody keeps emailing me who has authored a book where he has somebody on each side of the question. And you come out and
you've heard every single one of these arguments, probably.
Yeah. Here's what the New York Times says. 30,000 Americans are killed by guns every year, on the job, walking to school, at the shopping mall. Actually, of that 30,000, I think more than half commit suicide.
Really?
Yeah, I think that.
Oh, my.
If I'm wrong. And then if there's 30,000 Americans killed by guns, you could imagine there's probably 100, 150,000 people that are wounded. Now, this is a whack job nation. This, as our friend Greg Palast, always go to Greg Palast, PALAST.com, GregPalast.com, his wonderful book called Armed Madhouse. Now, most of us aren't crazy, and most of us don't do anything bad, and we've got like 250 million guns, literally, circulating, and almost all of us, we don't do anything harmful with it. I mean, there's accidents, there's suicides, there's murders, and, you know, there's all those little sayings that, you know, people don't kill, what's the thing? Guns don't kill. What is it?
It's guns don't kill people, people kill people, I think.
And then the other one is people with guns kill people.
Right.
So it's kind of a moot question, because there is no way in the world that anybody who seeks to do it, any politician, any change in the political order, could actually confiscate all the weaponry that people in this country have. And I guess I didn't finally make my point. There's a ragged edge of people that use guns in the absolute worst way. And so we see these every week. There's a mass murder. It doesn't even make big headlines.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not even shocking to the American people anymore, you know, the public, when they hear these stories. I mean, what was the latest one?
No, the guy in Kentucky. And a plastics plant, walked in, shot a supervisor, 4 coworkers, and then shot himself. Yeah, I mean, I've been PO'd at bosses, but not that bad.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I don't. It's just not in my realm of thought, nor is having a gun in my house. I'm not comfortable with it at all.
Yeah.
At all.
Now, one of the things that's interesting, the right wing, which makes up at least four of the justices. There are no liberals on the court, by the way. They're moderates. And then you have 4 hard rightists and 5 Catholics who, you know, and I don't, the reason I mention that is for things like abortion. But they're always talking, these conservatives are always talking, they don't like activist judges, that they're making the law rather than interpreting it. And what the New York Times says is absolutely right. In a radical break from 70 years of Supreme Court precedent, Justice Antonin Scalia, who is a nut job of the first magnitude, who belongs on pharmaceuticals rather than sitting on the Supreme Court.
Fox News, either one.
Yeah, declared that the Second Amendment guarantees individuals the right to bear arms for non-military uses, even though the amendment clearly links the right to service in a militia. But here's the other thing. So if you have the right to keep and bear arms, you would think then that he would be an absolutist. So he would say, if I want to have a rocket launcher or some sort of anti-tank weapon, or automatic weapons, why shouldn't I be able to have it? And where in the Constitution does it say that people have the right to bear arms unless you're a minor or if you have a history of mental illness or a history of felony? It doesn't say that. So it should be absolute then. Everybody, in fact, I started to say these nut jobs out in front of the Supreme Court, they had signs that were saying, arm every man.
I mean, every man?
Well, that's what it said.
Ah.
Well, you know where these guys are coming from.
I know. Well, so I was trying to figure out what this all meant, you know, and so I'm reading further, and basically what it means is that now the lobbyists for guns, the pro-gun lobbyists, will now try to end all gun restrictions, virtually, is what it says.
Well, they can't do it, though, because Scalia, who wrote the majority decision, said that there are all sorts of manner in which that gun ownership can be limited. He said background checks were okay. So this is completely a political decision. This is just red meat for the right wing. But there's a lot of gun owners, a lot of men, male gun owners particularly. I mean, women, I would think that in many ways that women would be the biggest advocates for the right to possess weapons.
For their own safety.
Because there's not a woman in America that feels completely safe anywhere.
Exactly, yeah.
You can go to the wealthiest area in America. You can go to the, you know, peaceful rural areas. Yeah. And no woman wants to, I mean, women do. I mean, women do a lot of, you know, increasingly, you know, do stuff on their own. But you can see, okay, you know, all these women would be armed. But it's essentially not going to do anything. It's not going to do anything to Michigan law, because Michigan has a right to carry law.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty easy to get.
There was a robbery recently somewhere around here, and a guy who had a gun on him, you know, on his person, stopped the robbery with this thing. And I thought, my God, I don't know who has a gun in, Sam, in the store. Who knows? People have guns on. That terrifies me, Peter.
Well, on the other hand, that's one of the arguments for possession, is that robbers will not know, rather than assuming everyone doesn't have a weapon, that they have to make the assumption that some do.
Well, you know,
I ain't talking.
Give them the money and run, man. Yeah. You know, just don't know. That was really bothersome to me.
Well, the people that I've seen that are the most interested in carrying a weapon, other than like store owners and they always could get it, are people that guys that live out in Macomb County or Western Oakland County. They say, I want to be prepared for everything.
Oh, please.
I mean, what are they?
Seriously.
You know? Yeah, come on. You know, where do we go? We go down to bars in Detroit, to Hamtramck and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't need a gun down there. I mean, if I thought I needed a gun to go into downtown Detroit or into Hamtramck, where was it? Friday night, yeah.
Right.
Hamtown. That rocks. We went to
it's a good time there.
What was that called? Whiskey in the Jar.
Yeah.
You ever been there?
No. It's a great name.
We said, do you have an outdoor deck? And they said, oh, yeah, out and back. You got to order your beer here. So we get these big glasses of beer and we go out. And it was like the alley, you know, except they had a fence around it.
Nice.
Even there was a sign say alley parking reserved for.
And did you feel like you needed a gun, Peter?
No.
Okay.
No. I felt like I needed another beer, which I had.
Good
so,
for you.
I don't know. Let me see. I guess people do want to talk about, but you know, there's nothing to talk about.
That's what you think.
Well, I mean, ultimately there's no way that people are going to be disarmed, because look, the law was about this Washington DC ordinance that forbid handgun ownership, right?
Yes, which that is has the highest crime rate in the country, I believe. DC most murders.
It has a lot of murders, so on one hand that's like an argument for having them, right? Well, you can say they can't have handguns, so then the crime rate and the murder rate goes up. On the other hand, sort of a parallel city about 40 miles away is Baltimore, mm-hmm. where people do have guns. They got a real high murder rate. So there's everyone, if you talk to people that want to abolish handguns or abolish guns in general or what have you. They have all these statistics, all these studies to show that handguns and the possession of them leads to crime, to murder, to all of this stuff. Then on the other side...
And accidents.
And accidents, yeah, yeah. I mean, the more that they're there, I mean, it kind of makes sense. The more that they're there, but that is not even... Right, let me finish. On the other side, on the other side, the people say, look, you can see in areas where people have the right to bear arms, that crime rate goes down. And then other people say, well, no, the crime rate went down in general. And you get nowhere. I mean, there's 250 million guns out there, and they ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't like that
number. So end of story. End of story.
But one thing that I noticed from this editorial in the New York Times, it said, sends yet another message that the United States values gun rights over human life.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact that so many people are killed, and it's 30,000, so, you know, there's like 300,000 people every decade that are killed by guns.
Jeez.
So the problem is twofold. Well, one thing, the states are absolutely irresponsible in not controlling gun dealers and gun distribution because they know that a large portion of guns are wind up to be used illegally.
Yeah,
and they're
right.
Not tracked well enough. So
I didn't realize that Virginia Tech shooting that 33 died in that. I mean I didn't even remember that number. And that was a guy who had been in. Locked up in a mental hospital.
Well, I forgot. I hope Virginia finally got some, you know, they had really loose laws. And what happens, cities with very strict laws that have crime problems like New York City, when they find out when guns that are used in illegal activity, they wind up coming from Virginia. Because you can go down to states like Alabama and say, I want 20 Glocks, you know.
And you can just get it?
Yeah, you can get it, and then you can bring them up here and sell them, and, you know, like that.
Lovely.
Yeah. So, it's, I don't know, the debate is not worth it, I guess. I mean, you're welcome to discuss it. Peter Hussein Werby, I got to keep thinking about it, and Jalene Hussein Jordan. Whoa, wait a minute. Jordan. That's like the country next to Iran.
Right. I'm double trouble.
Yeah, you are.
But you knew like that.
So if you're wondering what the hell am I talking about, is that all these young people have started using the middle name Hussein because these righties have tried to...
Smear.
Yeah, I'm trying to read and talk.
They're trying to label Barack Obama as a terrorist, basically.
Yeah.
And equate him to Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. Right.
Which is so ridiculous.
So now what we're saying is that we are... I can't get my own... There we go. That we're all Hussein.
I'm Spartacus.
Who is that guy? I'm Spartacus.
I don't know.
You know.
Is that old Chuck?
Well, they were all slaves. What are the guys sounded like? They, you know, this guy's from modern day England or something. I'm Spartacus.
He is bad acting.
Yeah, bad acting. 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
We'll see if any of you don't use your last name. Don't use your last name on the air. You can say, you know, like I'm Al Hussein. Or you can just say you're Al. No pressure. All right, let's take our first call. It's Jeff from Detroit. Jeff, hi, it's Peter and Jalene Hussein.
Hey, Peter. Hey, Jalene.
Hey.
Hi, this is Jeff Hussein.
Hello, Jeff. Welcome.
Yeah. One statement and one question.
Sure.
The one statement is you're correct on that. Antonin Scalia is nuts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is a question of what is the rationale for the criminalization of prostitution? I was thinking about this the other day. Don't ask me why. But a woman could, it's not the sex. A woman can have sex with 1,000 men as long as she don't charge them any money. She hasn't broken any laws.
Right.
But so what is the, and as far as like danger to her body or something, but you let people play football and box and everything else and make millions off their body, endangering their health.
Well, here's the deal, Jeff. I used to, for a long time, I'm very conflicted about this now, that it used to be, in fact, way, you know, years ago, I used to do shows on prostitution, and prostitutes would actually call up, and they were often, you know, working class or even middle class women who said, I don't want to work as a waitress, you know, making $9 an hour. I'm making, you know, 60 grand a year and not paying any taxes. But now what's happened, there has been so much, human trafficking in prostitutes and underage child trafficking that and it's all connected up with money laundering and drug trafficking and nothing to do with drugs, but the you know the people that are doing the big time drug trafficking ain't very nice people, and they're the ones that are involved in the human trafficking. So the libertarian view, which I usually adhere pretty closely to, is that it's a victimless crime, but it turns out that, in fact, there may be many more victims than we intend. So
they run their own show. It's one thing. And, for example, Amsterdam is a great example with that, in that they have, you know, they're screened health-wise, and I think they even have benefits. I don't know. I'm pretty sure.
Well, yeah.
Although that is, it's a universal health care there, so.
I was just, you know, curious as to what was the thinking behind making it a criminal act.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I think it was puritanical years ago when it first came in. I don't.
Oh, all the prudes came out to play.
Yeah. I don't think at the origins of this country was there. I don't know. I suspect there were not laws against prostitution. I don't know. I don't want to guess. Maybe someone knows that history. But thank you, Jeff. Thank you for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. One thing, though, that we associate with Amsterdam, this just in, the city's famed marijuana bars have weathered many challenges over the years and are still smoking. But now they face an unwelcome blast of fresh air. On July 1st, the Netherlands will be one of the last European countries to ban smoking in bars and restaurants in compliance with the EU law. The health ministry says the ban will apply to cafes that sell marijuana known as coffee shops. But this being Holland, which for centuries has experimented with social liberalism. I don't know, isn't the experiment a success if you do it for centuries?
Yeah, I should say.
It's like I always say, when I was in college, I experimented with marijuana.
It was a success.
Yeah, yeah. The ban covers tobacco, but not marijuana, which is technically illegal anyway, but they don't do anything. So when you go
in 5 grams.
Yeah, when you go in these shops, they sell you hashish.
Well, they have hash and they have pot. They have everything.
Really, I didn't know.
Yeah,
that. I know nothing.
I saw the menu. I was there.
I was there too, actually. And
okay.
Let me tell you that not being a cigarette smoker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's incredibly smoky over there. Paris was the same way. But so what happens is the Europeans mix their tobacco with their pot, and that's how they smoke it. But now, it's just crazy. They can't smoke legally tobacco in these places, but they can smoke weed. It's just crazy.
I know.
So what they're doing, I thought this was a really interesting story, is they're putting out colt's foot, which is like an herb of some sort.
Oh, yeah?
It kind of tastes like oregano, and they're offering that to mix with their weed, you see.
Well,
so that's how that's going.
If I get back to Amsterdam, maybe I'll try another experiment.
Oh, and they bought vaporizers, you know, which are those kind of smoking devices where there's no smoke.
Yeah.
So people who are concerned about smoke.
Can't they just get high on life?
I don't.
No.
No.
Okay.
Ask John Sinclair that question.
Exactly. Peter Hussein Werby, Angeline Hussein Jordan, 313-298-WRIF, and let's take another call. It's Adam from Romulus. Hi, Adam. It's Peter and Jeline.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good.
This is Adam Hussein.
Adam Hussein,
maybe we'll be part of a movement.
Hey. I know we don't want to talk about guns, and I don't want to either, but rather just kind of the Constitution argument. I'm really a centrist when it comes to the gun control argument because of friends that I love but don't understand. But when it comes to arguing the Constitution, there's this quote on the Second Amendment, or not specifically the Second Amendment, but it's a quote on the Constitution by Thomas Jefferson, and since I'm in my car, I can't quote it verbatim, and I hope you look it up, where it's in his memorial. and it's the first time I saw it when I visited there, he says something to the effect of, you know, I'm not for the frequent changing of governments, but we can't expect a man to wear the same pants as a child or as a man that he did as a child.
Uh-huh.
And basically what he's saying is that, you know, over time, societies change. And
right.
I mean, today in America, we don't worry about, what is the Third and Fourth Amendment, which is, you know, no soldiers, having quarters in,
You can't quarter soldiers. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So we don't worry about that amendment anymore because it will never be an issue because our society has gotten to the point where that isn't an issue. But when it was written in the 1790s, after you get out of a revolution and the fear of Great Britain coming again, like they did in 1812, that you worry about those things. So, you know, you argue, you say back in the beginning of the nation, the right to uphold arms and to form militias was crucial to winning the Revolutionary War. And so we understand why this amendment was passed. But once you come through, and I mean, whether or not we want to have gun control or not, is one thing. But when you argue the Constitution, and I really think when we look at issues like the Electoral College especially, we have to revisit the Constitution and realize its age.
Well, everybody, I would think most of it holds up, but the Fourth Amendment, of course, is the against unreasonable search and seizure. But the Third Amendment is no soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. When United States soldiers are like in Iraq, they just willy-nilly, take over people's homes and what have you. We see that frequently on the news. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Every part of the constitutional amendment. I mean, think about this. Everything from the first one about no law respecting the establishment of religion, prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or the press, or the right of people to peaceably assemble. All of that is. It's certainly been violated throughout American history, but there's always been a debate as to what constitutes the interpretation of the different amendments. And it turns out, to turn on one's political views. So there, if you can read, during the First World War, when most of us think that the civil liberties of people were grievously abridged, and yet the Supreme Court upheld the suppression of free speech, the destruction of opposition press, anti-war press, socialist press, and labor press, and what have you during that period. So that's what I'm saying. I don't know if we can get anywhere, too far. 313-298-WRF. Here's Randy in Detroit. Randy, hi. It's Peter and Jolene.
Hello.
Hi, Randy.
Hi. I was just calling because you asked about how prostitution became illegal in the United States, and it was used to be illegal in the Old West, and one of the reasons they started outlawing it in various states was because of the seedy people that it brought into towns and the trouble that they brought with them. The same reason they tried outlawing booze in the 30s, you know?
Yeah.
Just a bad...
Are you on life support? What's that beep, beep?
Oh, that was my radar detector. I'm driving.
Oh, okay.
People still use those?
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing I want to talk about was the price of gas. The reason I think that it's all of a sudden skyrocketing is because the oil companies realize that pretty soon they're going to be forced to lower their oil prices when all these new technologies go into full swing, you know, the hydrogen cars, the hybrid cars.
They're trying to make it while they can, indeed. All right, thank you very much for that little bit of history, and anybody has anything to add to that? When did prostitution become illegal? Was it
Except
always illegal?
In Nevada.
Oh, yeah.
Seen that. The Cat House, they have this show on like HBO or Skinamax or whatever it is, and I just think it's kind of gross.
Skinamax?
Yeah.
That's right. You know so much about these things. Peter Hussein... Werby and Jolene Hussein Jordan. We're saying that because people to combat the right wing that are trying to make issue of Barack Obama's middle name have been calling themselves that. I'll post that article up on my website. Or you can do, I'm going to see if I can do a, let me see. It's not.
Are you going to Google on the air again?
No, I'm, my brother is, my brother's a cop in, right here. Highly, highly restricted in Nevada. It's not legal to be just a hooker on the street.
Right.
My brother, I thought he was going to say my brother is a prostitute. My brother is a cop. in Vegas.
Wow. Florida. Can you imagine? Well, yeah, it's the bunny ranch that they go to. These wow. guys go to. Ugh. Yeah.
How much? Hundreds?
I don't know.
I can't. I don't get it.
It's just gross.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We'll be right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
What you are about to hear is illegal.
You have 7 new messages.
Yeah, this is Charles again from the collection agency about the money you owe us. You better call me back. We're going to sue you. We're not playing around. All right, pick up. Pick up. It's Charles from the collection agency. We need to get this debt taken care of, buddy, today. You want to go to jail?
If you've been the victim of harassing, threatening, or intimidating calls or letters from a debt collector, get free help. Even if you're being sued, they can help. Click on CollectionStopper.com. That's www.CollectionStopper.com. Or call 800-737-2345. Under the law, you can be awarded money damages and attorney fees when debt collectors cross the line or sue you. Remember this website, CollectionStopper.com. Or call 800-737-2345. End the harassment and collect money damages. If you've been the victim of harassing, threatening, or intimidating calls or letters, call 800-737-2345 or visit www.collectionstopper.com. They sue debt collectors and make them pay you. Get collectionstopper.com.
So I went out to lunch with those two hot chicks from accounting last week.
Oh, dude, I'm so jealous.
And we started talking about what attracts the opposite sex.
Oh, yeah, big, shiny car.
Hello? The one thing they both agreed on was a great smile.
Really?
Apparently, having healthy-looking teeth sends them a message that you take care of yourself. And if you care about yourself, then you'll care about her.
Yeah, but I always get nervous when I have to go to the dentist.
Yeah, I used to as well. Then one of the girls recommended Cherry Hill Dental Center. It's a state-of-the-art office that handles everything, including cosmetic and restorative procedures.
So maybe I should make an appointment.
Maybe. Come on.
What?
Dude, look in the mirror. When was the last time you've been to a dentist?
That's harsh.
Plus, they've got same-day scheduling most of the time. Just call Cherry Hill Dental Center. They're on Cherry Hill Road in Garden City. How easy is that? Or go to their website at cherryhilldental.com.
So, a good smile's going to help me with the ladies?
It can't hurt.
Hi, this is Dr. Dan. Backed by popular demand, Cherry Hill Dental Center's Zoom Summer Whitening Special. Just $2.99 now through Labor Day. Call 734-427-2880 or visit cherryhilldental.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
That is Peter Hussein Werby to you, buddy, and Jolene Hussein Jordan to me. Hey, hey, let's do a little Barrel House piano here. Dan Barker, the friendly neighborhood atheist. We're talking about the Constitution, so got a little something to say here.
We got to fight the battle of church and state. Church and state. Church and state, we got to fight the battle of church and state, over the wall come a tumbling down.
Yeah, that was Jefferson's words. He said we have to maintain a wall for church and state, and the founding fathers, as I made the point so many times, were so concerned that that wall be erected between church and state that the First Amendment, that's the first thing they mentioned. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion.
Oh, but, they're rolling in their graves.
But also, they said in Article 6, in the annotations, the senators and representatives and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath, which is religious, or affirmation, which is not religious, to support this Constitution. But they said, but no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States, shall ever be required as a qualification. So what the hell is religion doing in the political field? Who cares about John McCain's religion and Barack Obama's religion? And they're both a couple of fakes. I mean, do you think either of them are really, you know, praying to the Lord? They're praying to the Lord that the other dropped dead so they get to be the president. But here, John McCain met Sunday with evangelist Billy Graham and his son Franklin at the family's mountaintop retreat in North Carolina. Yeah. The Republican presidential candidate, who is actively courting religious voters and trying to reassure skeptical conservatives, visited privately with the Grahams on the grounds of Little Piney Cove.
Why does this guy get so much attention, Billy Graham?
I don't know. I mean, he's the guy that sat down. Well, they both say they're great leaders. Barack Obama met with the younger Graham, who's a right winger, and McCain said of Franklin Graham, he's a man whose family is respected. Yeah, when he was sitting down with Richard Nixon 40 years ago, must have been, talking about the Jews and not, when's he going to start doing something.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. But that's not the point. He shouldn't be sitting down with liberal clergy, of which there are a lot, which never get any play whatsoever. And as I've said so many times, while I denounce religion, that I want all my religious friends that are part of the mainstay of the Detroit peace and social justice community here in the city, that that these presidential candidates should not be talking to them at all. And it's just a fake.
Yeah. And then this James Dobson character rears his religious head and accuses Obama of distorting the Bible. Like, why? Seriously, not to, you know, be crass or anything, but why the hell are they even talking about it?
Right. And he said that Obama is pushing a, quote, fruitcake interpretation of the Constitution.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
I don't know. It's usually what, how they, I don't know.
Well, they describe gays.
Yeah. There was a police chief of Los Angeles said that he was against the remember I always say they don't
homosexual.
Homosexual. Yeah, they don't say.
I don't even think there's a, it's homosexual.
Yeah, they really pronounce homo.
Right.
They say homosexual as opposed to homosexual.
Right.
Is there a difference there? I think so. But anyways, I can't remember. Chief Parker, he said they want to turn this into a fruit world.
Oh, please.
Yeah, by the way, the fruit...
I'll tell you, it'd be a lot prettier. All the yards would be nicely groomed.
There you go.
I mean, look what those homosexuals have done to Ferndale, Michigan in the last 20 years.
Yeah. Big tens of thousands of gay people turned out in San Francisco today for the 38th annual Gay Pride Parade down Market Street. And the lesbian motorcycle group dressed in bridal veils and wedding gowns led a matrimonial touch to San Francisco's Gay Pride Parade Sunday as revelers celebrated their newfound freedom to marry. And, but shouldn't it only be between a man and a woman? Because if you allow men to marry men and women to marry women, well then...
They're going to have the rights like everybody else?
Yeah.
You mean?
Well, wait a minute. There's got to be. I mean, people vote.
Oh, wait, that's right. Nothing.
Yeah. No, there's got to be some. Let's think here. Because people vote to make gay marriage, it's in the Michigan Constitution.
Right. That it's.
So there's got to be a good reason. Let's think. So if a woman marries a woman, then.
I don't know.
Hey, come on. This is radio. We got to keep up. I mean, we.
We can't. I got nothing, Peter.
I got nothing either. I mean, you've been married. I'm married.
I've been married twice.
Really?
Failed. I don't do so well at that lovely institution.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's got to be something wrong with gay marriage, right? Or everybody, there wouldn't be so many people against it. I mean, there's less and less all the time, particularly younger people.
Yeah.
But it couldn't be people be against stuff for no good reason.
Oh, yeah.
Could there?
Yeah, I think so.
Prejudice, but most people,
ignorance.
Ignorant. They wouldn't be working off of that, you know.
Hatred.
Yeah, you know what they do?
Yeah, the same thing you do.
Anyway, stop thinking about it.
Yeah, quit thinking. Why don't you pay? If you paid more attention to your own sex life, it might be better.
Yeah.
or you may get some at all.
How do we get off? You know what? The computer screen over here. George Carlin, the wonderful, great George Carlin, died.
He passed away while we were on the air last week.
And we didn't notice it, yeah. So a little later in the show, we're going to play his Ten Commandments, which is...
fabulous.
Yeah. And you go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, and you have the unexpurgated, which means all the S-words and... S-words and all the words. Remember, what was it? How many words did they can't say? 11? 7?
7.
7 words?
Yeah.
Yeah, he says them all about every 2 minutes.
Nanosecond.
Nanosecond, yeah. All right, let's go back and get some more calls. Peter Hussein Werbe and Jalene Hussein Jordan And I don't know. I keep telling why we're doing that. But
there's a movement to support Saddam or Saddam Hussein.
Well, you just blew it.
I just
you
blew
totally
it
blew it.
To support Barack Obama because his middle name is Hussein. The right wingers are trying to demonize him for it, basically.
Yeah. So people are all over, particularly young, mostly young people. We're the oldest people known to have adopted that middle name as Barack.
That's fine.
Yeah. All right.
Never too old for intelligence.
I got somebody up here. It's Dave in Detroit. Dave, hi. It's Peter and Julian. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. It's me.
Yeah, it's you.
Okay, I wasn't sure. Yeah, David Hussein Spartacus here.
okay. Nice.
I wanted to take you a task on one thing quickly.
Sure.
You mentioned Daily Kos earlier in the show, the website.
Right.
You call it Daily Kos, and it's named after a guy named Marcos.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So,
well, if that's the only thing you got wrong, you're doing pretty well tonight, Peter.
No, but you're right. It is the Daily Kos. Because I have heard people like on Air America pronounce it, so I should have known better. Usually I claim, you know, like on television, I never watch it, so I only read names. That's sometimes how I get them wrong. But you're right. I should have known that one.
And then I just hope that you're going to give John Sidney McCain the same deal there with mentioning his middle name.
Sidney. Wow.
Sidney. Yeah. I know a lot of people probably only remember him for saying some of the jobs aren't coming back or else for saying that we're going to be in Iraq for 100 years. But he is John Sidney McCain.
Wait a minute, Dave. You're not starting to bring up issues. Don't we want to just deal with personnel and their wives? What about their wives?
Very much.
Yeah. All right, Dave, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And always, the complaint department and the correction department is permanently closed. No, it's always open.
We get our fair share.
Yeah, by the way, I sort of mentioned this in passing, but the music that I played, which was Battle of Church and State when we were talking about religion, it was from the double CD, Friendly Neighborhood Atheist by Dan Barker, who is the co-founder and co-president of Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org, and they even have a weekly radio show now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
he used to be a minister, and he also wrote religious children's songs, and he still makes money from that.
He
was like a little evangelical preacher of his own. Yeah.
Where did you know? I forgot a couple other things. These are kind of old. An Illinois man changed his name to In God We Trust.
Oh, I read that, and it's In God.
Yeah,
that's We Trust.
That's his first name. Yeah.
Yeah,
and then I like the guy, the Ohio teacher who burned crosses on kids' arms.
What?
You didn't miss that? A public school teacher preaches Christian beliefs despite complaints by other teachers and administrators, and used a device to burn the image of a cross in students' arms, and so they got rid of him.
Wow.
See their prejudice against Christians. That just shows you, right? All right, well, here, let me see if we can, we'll go to somebody else here. Here, they've been waiting a long time. It's Jimmy in Bridgewater. Jimmy, it's Peter Hussein and Jalene Hussein. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, I am Spartacus. Period.
Okay, good. That's cool.
I'm the slave that's bitching about everything.
That's good.
Marriage. I was going to talk about guns, but you brought up gay marriage, and that really interests me. Have you ever thought about the fact that why is the government involved in marriage in the first place?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, what is the deal with that?
Yeah.
Why do I have to have a license or a birth certificate? Why do I need a birth certificate or a death certificate? I'm either alive or I'm not.
Okay.
You know, I mean, right? I mean, what do I need? I need a piece of paper to prove that I was born?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that ridiculous? I need a piece of paper to prove that I'm dead.
You sound like an anarchist, Jimmy.
Really?
Yeah, Jimmy, do you read much? Do you like novels at all?
No, I don't read novels. I read I read truth. I don't read fiction.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm up to here with the Leonard Skinner song. I'm always quoting this. I know a little and I can guess the rest. But no, there's a good, great novel by a tremendous author, B. Traven, T-R-A-V-E-N, called The Death Ship. And it's about a sailor who loses his identity papers. And he's told at one point, who are you? You cannot even prove you exist.
A buoy.
Yeah. 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 So, if I thought deeply about it, there's probably in modern bureaucratic society a lot of reasons why we should be able to prove why we're who we are, when we were born, and stuff like that. But
well, go to RainierForRep.com and read about her gay marriage whole thing, and you'll see that the whole deal. And get used to that name, because Mark Schauer, he's history. He's gone.
Yeah, well, he's
going to lose.
Before your history, you got to be like in the present. Who's that? This is a state rep or something?
He's the minority leader of the United States.
Oh, the Michigan.
Michigan Senate.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, he's a pretty boy, and he's going to lose. He's going to lose to a 5'2" woman that's smarter than him.
Yeah.
Hey, are you talking about me again?
Yeah. Are you 5'2"?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm a shrimp.
Thank you. You know, you shouldn't tell people that.
Why?
Well, men visualize women. In fact, I knew a band. Well, you know the band The Layabouts?
Yeah.
They originally were going to call themselves Big Women.
Really?
Yeah. And when I was a kid, I talk about free associating. When I used to, when I would look at these playmates in Playboy, you know, like when I was 16, 17 years old. And I was probably 16, so I was probably then 5'8 or 5'9. And I assumed these women were bigger than me. They were taller than me.
That is so bizarre.
Yeah, I thought they were these like huge women with these huge, what word can we say on the air? Well,
body parts.
Yeah. Breasts. We can say breasts.
Well, you know, and a lot of people, when they meet me, after they hear me on the air, they go, you are so little. They
really?
Can't, because I have this big, booming voice and big opinions.
Oh, I thought you were going to.
I'm not telling them about that.
So then one time I was going to the state fair, and they said they were going to have these playmates. So, you know, like this 17, I was just all these raging hormones. So I wanted to go see these big women. And so I go there, and it's like these 5-foot-tall women with these gigantic breasts.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's not just talk about me. Let's talk about me a little more. Are we on? Are we on the air?
This is a live show.
Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan, middle name Hussein on both of us. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. And here is Ray. Ray's in Detroit. Thanks for joining us from the Motor City proper.
Yeah, how you guys doing? The Hussein couple.
Usually we've been called insane. This is the first time we've ever been called Hussein. Usually we're insane.
Well, if the previous caller was Spartacus, then I'm Saladin, all right?
Okay.
So basically what I'm touch base on is maybe a subject a lot of people don't want to talk about. They really don't want to address. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, there's always this big, you know, question, how do you stop terrorism? How do you stop terrorism, especially when it's coming from a Muslim society? And I've had the privilege of actually traveling to the Middle East. I've been to several countries there. And, you know, to let you know as an American firsthand, the people there do not hate Americans.
No.
They do not hate Americans at all. What they hate is American foreign policy. Now, I know this is a subject that a lot of people don't want to talk about. That's a kind of hush-hush policy, but it's the truth.
Well, we should be talking about it nonstop because that's what has us in the trouble we are.
Exactly, but here's the thing. As long, and this is once again a subject that may get me in trouble right now because a lot of people, especially in the media sector, a lot of people don't want to hear about it. As long as we have this totally biased angle in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, we have this unconditional support of them, you're going to continue to see the radicalism that will continue to, you know, to grow. You want to get rid of, you know, you want to get rid of terrorism, you have to get rid of the environments that breed terrorism.
Sure.
And one of those reasons is that a lot of Americans are pretty much, you know, I don't want to say they're out to lunch, but they're too busy with the Monday Night Football and the six-pack of Miller Lite to realize that the United States government is the biggest supporter of the dictators in the Middle East. The King of Saudi Arabia is a staunch ally of the administration, whether it be Democrat or Republican.
Mm-hmm.
It's either way. The president of Pakistan, the president of Yemen, the president of Egypt, all of these governments are extremely oppressive toward their people.
Indonesia, the biggest Muslim country in the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we're continually allied with these leaders who are extremely oppressive. Then we wonder why the people end up, you know, they revolt. They don't know who to revolt against because, one, you've got the government of the U.S. supporting the dictatorship or the monarchies, whatever you want to call them, or the legitimate governments like in Jordan and other countries like that. We support their governments. We provide them with weapons as long as they're our lab dogs and they give us the oil, they give us the natural resources that we suck. But then as long as the people there are oppressed, well, we say to ourselves, you know what, it's okay. Then we wonder why are they committing these acts of terrorism?
We should have a posture in the world that the people of the Middle East shouldn't hardly know who we are. But we are over in other people's area, mucking in their business, and we've seen the results of it. All right, well said, Ray. I thank you very much.
Yeah, couldn't have said it any better.
I could.
Peter.
No, he said it very well.
He said it very well.
I was only kidding. All right, let's get a quick comment in here from Al from Inkster. Al, it's Peter and Jolene. How you doing?
Yeah, I got a... Well, in memory of George Carlin, he once said, you got to love a tattooed woman because you know she'll do something she'll regret in the morning.
Hey, are you talking about me again? Why is everyone talking about me tonight?
How many tattoos do you have? Do you want to come up?
I think I have like 13 or 14.
Wow.
All the way down my back, yeah. I'm a masochist.
And nothing wrong with short, strong-willed women. My mother was a short, strong-willed woman.
Mine too.
Mine
too.
Maybe that's why I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
She gave birth to two children and had two miscarriages while my dad was in Vietnam.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. What a woman.
But
anyhow.
Actually, we were getting close to our break. So you wanted to talk about why prostitution should be outlawed?
Yeah, no, a form of prostitution that should be outlawed. The president of American Axle voted himself an $8.5 million bonus.
Come on. This is the company that just cut workers' wages, that forced them to accept this humiliating contract after...
Cut them in half, basically.
Yeah. So he got rewarded. So the $8.5 million could have been given to the workers. This guy already made millions and millions, right? Eat the Rich. We could have our Eat the Rich segment.
We have a couple of good items to present tonight.
Yeah. All right, Al, we've got to take a break.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was going to actually play that, but unfortunately, we got to do these right now. So, Peter Hussein Werby, Jolene Hussein Jordan, and we'll be right back at 313-298-WRIF.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this. Another WRIF concert.
A night of no bullshit rock.
I got me a rock and roll band. It's a fever all.
I feel like we got lots of friends out there tonight.
It's Ted, White and Blue, 4th of July, with Ted Nugent. Live on stage. Hell Fire Concerts presents 4th of July with Ted Nugent. Detroit's Rockin' Rampage. The Nuge is loose. Friday, July 4th. Live at DTE Energy Music Theater. Tickets are on sale now at PaddlesNet.com. The Paddles and Venue Box Office is all Ticketmaster outlets or call 248-645-6666. This 4th of July, come support the Ted White and Blue. Ted Nugent, part of the Bellfire Concert Series.
A part of history as Ted Nugent plays his 6,000th career concert. Macomb County's biggest three-day festival is an American celebration like no other. 101 WRIF and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan present the 2008 Stars and Stripes Festival. Now through this Sunday in downtown Mount Clemens. And it's totally free to the public. Catch live performances from Candlebox, Johnny Lang, Sponge, Skid Row, and more on the Budweiser stage presented by Real Detroit Weekly, plus Metro Detroit's hottest local bands on the rock stage, including the Dirty Americans, the Brian Schramm Band, and 60 Second Crush. There's a massive fireworks display Friday night after dark, the brand new Mobile One Teen Zone with BMX Star Show and skateboard exhibits, plenty of great food all weekend long in the Royal Brian Ford Taste of America, carnival rides, the Meyer Kid Zone, art displays, a salute to the military, and so much more. Get more info at starsandstripesfest.com. Now through this Sunday in downtown Mount Clemens. The 2008 Stars and Stripes Festival, brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan and 101 WRIF.
My HD radio is like a zombie movie, you know? You know how zombies keep catching up with you even though they can't even run? I went to the car audio department, there's an HD radio. Clock radio department, there's an HD radio. MP3 player aisle, there's an HD radio. These things don't even have legs.
HD radio is taking over the world. Get yours at Circuit City and Amazon.com.
100% free HD radio at HDradio.com. It's time to upgrade.
By now you know about Motor City Steals and Deals.
It's the incredible program that nets you half off or more from some of Metro Detroit's best businesses.
But have you looked in our bargain bin? The savings are outrageous, like $50 gift certificates for just $10. To purchase, just click on the Buy Now button. Act fast. When these are sold out, that's all she wrote. To start saving, go to WRIF.com, click on the Motor City Steals and Deals link, and select the bargain bin.
Get great deals from Mumbly's Off-Road, Elegant Creations Modern Jewelry Design, The Great Frame-Up, and many, many more.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Welcome back. Eat the Rich, sings Crocus. And you know what I want to set up? Oh, by the way, Peter.
Oh, the belch is a little disturbing. It just came right out of nowhere.
Well, the belch is from Aerosmith.
I know, but I wasn't expecting it.
Because, wait a minute here. We also have the Aerosmith version.
Now, folks, here's something else I got a
problem with. I got
That's
the wrong,
a different.
Yeah, I got the wrong thing
late,
going.
Great.
Yeah. I got to stop this here. Where's my mouse here? Yeah, we're going to get on a little George Carlin a little later. How come this thing won't stop?
There you go.
There you go. All right. So,
Take two.
Yeah, let me see. Oh, here's Aerosmith, Eat the Rich. Yeah, all right.
Hooray! Eat the Rich! There's only one thing a man can fall. Eat the Rich! If he wants my mouth, back tomorrow. Yelsey, let me have my money. I can do a good job with it.
Eat the Rich, folks, they're eating us. And the example, Al from Inkster just brought it up. American axle workers have gotten screwed so badly, even with the union. And what the companies, corporations like American Axle is trying to do is if they can break unions like the UAW, those of you who aren't unionized, which is the vast majority of everyone, then it's going to be like Mexico. First they'll get us down to $12 an hour, then $8 an hour, then they'll repeal the minimum wage law, and it'll be like the workers outside of Mexico City that are producing the Ford Fiestas that had to agree to a two-tier wage and are making $2 and something an hour to make Ford products. Ain't that sweet? So we got to start eating them because they are eating us. And right now, the Millionaires Club in the world has grown to 10 million. You think, wow, that's a lot of people. Maybe I could become one. Except there's what? How many people? 6 billion now on the planet? Number of people around the world with at least 1 million in assets passed 10 million for the first time, according to a new report that was put together by Merrill Lynch. And the aggregate wealth of the 10 million is $41 trillion.
Wow.
$41 trillion. Do you understand that everything that we look and we see these, what we see all through Africa and Latin America, we see in our own country, the loss of jobs.
Poverty,
death, sickness, everything. Ugh. All of this money, all of it. Well, I'm sorry.
Just like $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Just take one.
Maybe a few more.
Okay.
$2 trillion. So we'd leave them with $39 trillion. And what they do with it, like they'd buy a Monet. Monet was a French painter. And early in the evening, a couple of days ago, the summer auction season began in London at Christie's. And they sold this Monet for $80.4 million to one person, an unidentified buyer. And the previous record for a Monet, you'd be glad to know, was only $41.4 million. And so there's such a, I mean, if you think about the world in terms of wealth as a pyramid, except it's very, very, very sharp. So at the top, there's, I can't do the math on it, but 10 million out of 6 billion, what does that turn out to be? I mean, extraordinarily almost needle sharp, and then it just begins to spread really quickly. And then you get down to the people that are living on, a few cents a day all through billions and billions of people, a couple billion people.
Well, and how just about the people who can't, I mean, putting gas in the car is a stretch
anymore. I just paid $60
Oh, for your small car.
I don't have a small car. How dare you?
It's compared to mine, it is.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Actually, mine's just a normal size car. A Taurus.
Yeah.
You could put my Taurus in your trunk.
I know. God. Last big vehicle ever.
How much does it cost to fill yours up?
I don't even know.
Yeah. You go in there and get $3 worth.
Yeah,
I mean, come to work here.
I live so close. Put $25 in, you know.
Yeah. Other people, a Chinese investment fund manager won a chance to have lunch with billionaire Warren Buffett by bidding $2.1 million in the most expensive charity auction ever held on eBay.
$2 million to fly to New York and have dinner with Warren Buffett.
Yeah. But this, I mean, I got to tell you, I don't know if you've ever been to the Museum of Modern Art in New York?
I have. MoMA.
MoMA. Yeah. Well, so they have Monets there. And these are extraordinary paintings. I mean, they're so beautiful. But you know, you can go to a block away at the Center for Creative Studies where you students and they've got really good looking stuff.
Oh, yeah, they do.
But this is paint on a canvas and if somebody's paying $80 million for it,
wow.
And you know what they're going to do? They're going to hang it in their room. This is not a... So, eat the rich.
Well, it's really hard to even fathom.
I can't. All right. Let's go back to our phones. 313-298-WRIF. We're going to get to our George Carlin. We're going to play Ten Commandments, one of my faves. If you want to hear more, this has got a lot of beeps in it, folks, because this station is operating under an FCC license.
Well, yeah. We like to stay within the...
Yeah, we always do.
Yeah.
And that's why we're on this, aren't we on like a 30-second delay now?
Yeah.
So you're not hearing this live.
Well, yeah, it's a little behind.
That's terrible. I shouldn't even have said that.
I think anyone knows that there's a delay at radio stations because, especially this is a live talk show. We're talking to you on the phone. We don't know what people are going to say, and we have to protect us and the radio station.
Yeah. But David wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He writes, it's 12:41 Eastern time, and you said it's Monday morning. Aren't you Central time? Are you live? I don't understand. He must be listening on the Internet.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I wrote him and said, where are you calling from?
It's Eastern time here.
wait a minute here. What is it? Winston Smith. Remember who Winston Smith was?
Oh, from 1984.
Yeah, that's right. He writes in, I am not Spartacus. He is. I'm Winston Smith. Cool. I like that. And then, let's see, I'm writing also... I can't focus on this one.
Too much.
Yeah. But no, we are in, for those of you listening around the country and around the world, we are in the far western end of the Eastern time zone, which is the best place to be because that means, around now, it's still light, like 20 to 10, quarter to 10.
Oh, right? Cali?
No, here. Because we're on the far western edge of the time zone.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So that's, I bet you all found that just
fascinating.
Fascinating.
Woo!
I'm sure.
Peter.
let's see. Here is Lars. Lars is in Madison Heights. Lars, Peter, and Jalene Hussein, you're on the air.
This is Lars Mouse Stalin Guevara.
Mouse Stalin. You know what? You know, actually, there are people, they were trying to stop for a while people in Venezuela from coming up with names like that. They'll have people whose names are like Mao Stalin Che, you know, for
really?
Real. Yeah.
Don't get Peter started on the Maoists.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was crunching the numbers a little while ago.
Yeah.
And I took a look at the war in Iraq has caused $532 billion so far, you know, not even counting replacing the gear and paying benefits.
Actually, Lars, it's $650 billion with this. Now the Democrats are responsible for the war as well. They just passed this $162 billion bill, and that includes also the spending bill will bring to more than $650 billion the amount Congress has provided for the Iraq war since Bush started it 5 years ago on a basis of total lies. For operations in Afghanistan, the total is nearly $200 billion. So we have spent $850 billion outright costs. So some of the people that said this was going to wind up to be $2.1 trillion, they're now upping it another trillion. Go ahead, Lars. Sorry.
Well, what I was saying is I took that estimate of what we had spent so far and the fact that the U.S. military claims to have killed roughly 20,000 terrorists, it caused, at that estimate, it cost $26.6 million per terrorist.
Buy them off. That'd be a better way. No, and you know, American soldiers are just, no one even notices that. I have a part of my site where I list the total number. They, you know, most people aren't even aware. People got killed yesterday in Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
I sent an email to one of my friends who's still in my old unit and asked him why so many people from the unit are reenlisting. And he said they're giving out $65,000 bonuses.
Yikes. I still can't understand it. I mean, you could wind up on the short end of an IED, right?
Well, it's like they have the choice between either getting out with whatever they have in the bank and then being recalled, you know, maybe
anyway.
Months later.
Yeah, anyway.
Or,
right.
Or reenlisting and getting a bonus and then fulfilling their IRR time, or, you know, the ready reserve time.
I forgot. You were,
getting out.
You were in the Marines?
Yeah, I was in the Marines.
Well, they just got 142% of their April recruitment
quota.
Goal.
Yeah,
quota.
Well, how many of that was like waivers for guys with swastika tattoos on the back of their neck?
Yeah, they've dropped all those standards, haven't they?
Yeah, how many guys were just holding the pen while the recruiter moved the paper because they don't know how to spell their name?
you're cruel, Lars, but as Monty Python used to say, but fair. All right. Thank you, Lars. I appreciate it. Now, 30,000 troops are heading to Iraq in 2009. Civilians.
New troops?
Yeah, essentially, yeah. American soldiers fatally shot three Iraqi bank employees on Wednesday as their car passed a convoy near Baghdad International Airport. And also,
why? You know?
Well, you know, I'll tell you. Hours earlier, an American helicopter fired missiles into a home near Tikrit, killing a family of five, including women and children, local officials, and a relative said. The American authorities said that they came under fire. You know, there's attempts sometimes where people feel if you indicate that American soldiers have killed so many civilians that you think, oh, there must be some horrible, monstrous people. If you and I were there, you know, it's not like you're fighting an army that's across from you with,
exactly.
Uniforms. So everyone turns out to be your potential enemy.
Yeah.
And that's it. Also,
they don't know who they're shooting at.
Right. Civilian deaths up 60% in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah. The Taliban is back.
Yeah, big time. Right. Major General Antonio Taguba, now retired, served as deputy commanding general for support for the Third Army for 10 months in Kuwait during the early days of the Iraq occupation. And he said that, as far as he's concerned, that he wrote this something called Preface to Broken Laws, Broken Lives. And he says that he's accused the Bush administration of war crimes.
So, along with a lot of other people.
Yep. All right, 313-298-WRIF is our phone call, and let's see. Oh, wow. Todd from Southgate. Is this Todd?
Yes, it is. I am the one that brought up Hussein's last middle name last week.
Well, you know what? I owe you an apology, don't I?
Why?
Well, because I got all over you, and so did Jalene, because we said, you know, how come you're bringing up Hussein? Now we're saying this is Peter Hussein Werby and Jalene Hussein Jordan.
No, it's like you guys must have thought about this all week, and it bugged you so much.
I just read about it in the paper today that all these young people on Facebook are calling themselves Hussein.
And trust us, we don't sit around and obsess over this.
Yeah, okay, anyway, what I'm saying is, if you guys were thinking about this so much, doesn't that kind of make you guys the ones who are kind of racist, or what?
I'll think about that.
This is getting dumber by the minute, Todd.
Yeah, I'll think about this all week.
Come on.
You got anything more for us?
Actually, I do. So what I've learned about you, Peter, since I've been listening to you for about, I don't know, last 2 months or so, is that you want the legalization of drugs.
Yeah.
You're apparently against guns.
Hold on. What makes you think I'm against guns?
I didn't hear you defending the rights of gun owners.
I'm a gun owner.
You are a gun owner? Okay. Yeah. Well, then I'm sorry. I was mistaken on that
okay.
point.
I'm
okay.
the one who's against
guns. So then anyway,
guns.
You're for the legalization of drugs.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're for the legalization of prostitution, too. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, you know what? Actually, I was saying, libertarians who think that you'd think with some conservatives would be in on this, too, that the government doesn't have the right to control adult behavior like drugs, like prostitution, or there's always all these other things, gambling and what have you. But as I said, if you were listening before, I said it turns out that there's a lot more problems with prostitution than and
you're comfortable with.
Yeah, because there is a whole thing about human trafficking and child trafficking and what have you. Jeline brought up the idea of or the concept that in the Netherlands that it's highly regulated and hopefully they don't run into those problems. But go ahead. What else did you find out?
Why wouldn't you want to defend the point that it should be illegal just on the moral grounds?
Well,
it depends on whose morality it is. You have your own morality. Peter has his own. I have my own. And how can you can't blanket statement that one.
Yeah, how do you,
I think you can.
Well, you can, but I can't.
Selling sex is not at the top of my aesthetic or buying it is not at the top of my aesthetic or I don't know what else. But, people get themselves in different positions. I mean, a lot of men.
No pun intended, sorry.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't even thought about that. You know, a lot of men don't have access to sex because of any number of reasons. And a lot of women, mostly motivated by economic reasons, maybe some things like drug addiction or whatever, get into it. But moral, I don't even know what's moral. How do you make that assertion? Assertion? What did I make up that word? Or no, assertion. Is that a word? Assertion. Go ahead.
Assertion. It's assertion, by the way. Anyway.
Assertion.
What do you mean? You're going to sit there and actually argue with me and say that prostitution is a moral thing or something?
Where is the moral? What's the basis of the morality?
Is it religion? Are you basing this?
I am Christian. Yes.
Okay.
I think that's a moral standard.
Well, it is. But since we're atheists, you know.
Okay. Well, of course you are. You're liberal. I mean, come on.
No, wait.
A lot of Christian liberals.
You know what? I'll bet you that there are more.
You are something else, Todd.
I'll bet you that there are more atheists. I'm out on a limb here, but I'll bet you that there are more atheists among Republicans than there are among Democrats.
Yeah, there might be. That's fine. But the atheists on the Republican side aren't the ones who are trying to get God out of everything. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I'm not trying to get God out of everything. I'm trying to get God out of the government. Like our founding fathers, many of who were religious, realized how poisonous that the commingling of government and religion was, the experience that they had. That's why it's the first thing in the First Amendment. No religion.
Bibles used to be a staple in public schools paid for by the government,
right.
And religion classes were mandatory.
Right.
So, yeah, there's kind of two sides of the story, but you don't want to bring that part up.
No, no, no. Anyway. But then there were Supreme Court decisions that realized that all of those laws that for prayer in the school and what have you, listen, you say you're Christian, then you must have a church. And there's last time I saw, there's churches all over everywhere. And then there's also a few synagogues and mosques and temples and stuff like that. So, what are you going to have this always on, like on the money and everything like that?
Okay. Let me ask you one final question, Peter. How come you bring up the civilian deaths in Iraq, but you never bring up anything good?
I don't know.
Do you actually,
there isn't really anything good to bring up.
What possibly could be good? I mean, we say good. They got rid of this U.S. sponsored dictator, Saddam Hussein, who had the support of all these U.S. governments and gave him, encouraged him in his wars and gave him Donald Rumsfeld went over there, gave him a pair of golden spurs and on and on and on. I mean, what's good? I mean, you say, oh, now they're getting electricity back. Well, they had electricity before all this, you know, and they didn't have hundreds of thousands of people dead. They didn't have millions of people as refugees and hundreds of thousands of people wounded. We didn't have thousands and thousands of men and women wounded, or I'm sorry, dead. We didn't have tens of thousands of people wounded with severe injuries and psychological difficulties. Where's the good here, Todd? I'm missing it.
If I recall, I believe there was how many hundreds of thousands of Kurds that were gassed by Hussein?
It wasn't hundreds of thousands at all. The guy was an awful guy. You know, he gassed people and killed them, and then after he did, Ronald Reagan's boys, including Rumsfeld, went over there and shook his hand and gave him a little present.
Yeah.
And I will agree with you that that was a huge mistake in American history.
Right, okay.
Okay? Now we're trying to make it right. What's
wrong? We're trying to make it right by killing everybody and having our people killed and $850 billion when schools are closing and cities have to sell off parks in my suburb, they're going to lay off cops and firemen? Come on. $850 billion. That would go a long way in our country. And it's going to I think you're younger than me. And you know what you're going to be doing, Todd, for the rest of your life? You're going to be paying for George Bush's war. All right. Thank you, sir. Thanks for joining me. If you want to really find out, I mean, I said earlier that people don't usually call us Hussein. They usually call us insane. If you really want to see how crazy I am, you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. All right. And then that'll tell you what a total left-wing whack job I really am.
You say it so proudly.
Yes, I am. Here's Mike in Detroit. Mike, it's Peter and Jalene. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, I was just listening to you guys talking with that last fella, and he was bringing up, like, morality issues and stuff like that about the war and all kinds
prostitution,
of stuff.
Prostitution, right?
Prostitution, stuff like that. I'd say, like, prostitution. You can't keep somebody from doing it, and you can't keep somebody from wanting to participate in that with, say, a prostitute. That's their own moral issues. Me, preferably, I wouldn't touch it, you know. But, you know, it all runs along the certain lines of how you are with your own self. But, you know, another thing, like with the morality issue, and you bring up the war and the use of our soldiers, I stand behind our soldiers 110%,
mm-hmm.
because our soldiers are doing the job that they're supposed to be doing. The thing is our government, our officials that are nothing more than our servants, are abusing our soldiers.
Sure.
And
well, actually,
going into war unconstitutionally.
I agree. Actually, they have them not doing what they're supposed to be doing. It's supposed to be defending our country, and instead, they're fighting this war to establish these oil companies from getting back in there. And then that's not what they're doing. I mean, anybody who's over, I mean, I never fought in a war. I've never been in the military. But anytime you talk to anyone like that, their main thing is keeping themselves and keeping their comrades alive. So the war is very, very personal.
I'll tell you what, you know, if I got stuck in war, I'd whack as many guys as I possibly could if it's going to keep my skin.
Well, I don't think you and I or Jalene would be functioning any differently if we were over there.
But the thing is, though, is like the morality issues. Okay, you go ahead and you look at Bush. Okay, you look at, who was that, McCain, Cheney. You look at Barack Hussein Obama.
Yeah.
Okay, you look at these fellas. Did you know that Cheney, Bush, and Barack are all related to each other? And if you really do your research and you get online to these ancestry places, that you'll find that their bloodline runs back to
the Illuminati.
To what is that? Vlad the Impaler.
That's okay. Dracula. Vlad the Impaler.
Well, no, I'm serious. He's a real man.
He
existed in history.
Yeah,
these people are actually related to that bloodline. And our government officials and all these people in power are in bloodlines. Okay, you look at the way that our educational systems work. Our educational systems suck, man, because we're being funded by the people that are trying to keep us stupid. They have 1% that are going to think outside of the box. They're going to really use their brains, and they're the people in control. And that's like 1% of the population.
Well, and then it's up to us to take that challenge, Mike, and become critical thinkers and not to just swallow all the pap that comes through the television. In fact, I always say, you know, the best thing, turn the television off. That's the worst source of information.
Just watch it for entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Mike, thank you very much. Vlad the Impaler, I got to say, I haven't heard that one before. I could imagine Cheney being, and what Vlad used to do.
He's such a bloodsucker.
Yeah, that'd be bloodsucker, you know, that is Dracula. Vlad would like line his route with people impaled on spears and stuff like that.
Oh.
A mean mother.
I guess.
Yeah, I think, and pardon me, in Transylvania. Yeah. Okay. Okay, let's go to Ron in Lyon Township. Hi, Ron. It's Peter and Jalene. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Jalene. Good evening.
Hi.
Good evening.
I wanted to actually touch on the third rail.
Sure.
And that's U.S. Sugar just made a settlement with the state of Florida.
Yeah.
To somehow quit evaporating the water that would go to the Everglades.
They're going to shut down U.S. Sugar facilities at the northern tip of the Everglades to stop the, you know, to allow the Everglades to come back and to make it a natural a natural source again. And so U.S. Sugar is going out of business, and all the workers are out of jobs.
Well, Peter, that is the third rail. U.S. Sugar, U.S. Fruit is the reason for all the invasions. Every place we've ever, from the shores of Tripoli to the halls of Montezuma, which is backwards.
Well, certainly in Guatemala.
Isn't that a song?
Well, you name it. We've been there.
That's right.
That's it, brother.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. From the halls of Montezuma. Yeah.
I have to say the Everglades are beautiful.
Yeah, but they...
I used to ride my bike through these.
But, yeah, down Shark Valley.
Yeah.
Those little gators nipping at your ankles.
Yeah.
U.S., this is excellent that they're buying out. Some people think it's a real scam that U.S. Sugar was doing real badly anyway, so they left with a big chunk of change. But whatever, the idea that the Everglades will be preserved and not destroyed by, because I can't even remember all of it, but they got all these kind of, not dams, but canals and all that, and it's all going to be eliminated. So it's an excellent thing. United Fruit, yeah, like United Fruit, the CIA, at the behest of United Fruit in 1954 overthrew the elected government of Guatemala because they were afraid they were going to nationalize some unused United Fruit lands. And that essentially set in place a 30 or 35-year civil war that wound up with hundreds of thousands of Guatemalans dead. I mean, the United States has little respect for democracy,
yeah,
unless they're client states of the U.S. All right,
and we know who they are.
Yes, let's go back here. Come on, little mouse, work for me, please. All right, there you go. It's James in Hazel Park. James, it's Peter and Jolene. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good.
Good. I actually want to crunch a couple of numbers, but actually I called a couple weeks ago. You guys had let me go because I was talking about my paintings at the Dirty Show, but I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
You remember me, right?
Let's talk about the Dirty Show.
How could we forget?
Yeah. Yes. It's funny because the only person that actually heard me that I knew was my dad. He didn't know I did that. It was kind of funny.
Oh, my God.
So
that's
like,
what you get for going on a talk show on the radio, huh?
I know. He loves your show, and it took him a long time. Like, I remember when I was young, listening to Rage Against the Machine and stuff and telling him about, government conspiracies and all this stuff. It took him, the Bushes actually convinced him that it's all been, BS from the beginning. But anyways.
So what's up, James? What's up tonight?
Well, what I originally called about then, a couple weeks ago, was, I really think that a lot of the political shows are afraid to talk about the opportunity or, like, that there might be a chance that Obama might be assassinated, and I think that it's not on the news because it's such a touchy issue, but someone going against the status quo and taking away from the industrial war complex and all the government contracts. You got conspiracies, Bobby Kennedy and all this and that. But just the fact that someone that, not that he's black, but the fact that he's going to be taking away all this money from the corporations that have, are basically puppeteers.
He's much in line. Yeah, he's just another Democrat.
And he's getting, all this corporate money. But I'll tell you, the Secret Service has this lawsuit against it by these black Secret Service agents that said that the supervisors routinely made racist jokes and sent out racist cartoons over the Internet and all that. So these are the guys that are going to be protecting President Obama. So I think what he should do is get somebody who's far to the left of him as insurance. Like someone said, if Hillary becomes his vice president, he'll last about 5.5 months, and then he'll be he's gone. He's out of there.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No, neither do I. But I'm sure that there's a concern about it, and I don't know. I guess, you know, anybody who...
A lot of people are talking about that, though.
The fact that here is this... that Barack Obama is not even a center leftist. He's just a centrist. And, you know, you have to even get over on the left, you have to be somebody like the independent Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont that actually has a program of a moderate left program, which would put him probably in Europe in a lot of parties, would put him in a socialist party, some of the, you know, mainstream socialist parties.
Some of those
in
crazy ideas of his.
Yeah, I mean, like universal health care.
Oh,
what
crazy.
A rat. The guy's off the hook.
Yeah, let's provide for our people. No.
Oh, God, he's crazy. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, James. We've got time for one more call before our break, and then we'll be right back after that, so don't go away. Here is John in KPAC. John, it's Peter and Jalene Hussein. Hi. You know, people are probably tuning in now. We can't say what we're talking about every time, but go ahead.
Okay. This is kind of like a whole system change, but I just got back from a mission trip down to Mexico. Had a great time.
Uh-huh.
Well, I came back and I found my truck with the driver's side window busted out.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm sick of stupid people.
What's your bumper sticker say?
My bumper sticker says, Armada Fair, because I'm from a little town. It's called KPAC, you know that. It's north of I-69. I'm from way up.
Yeah, oh, okay, so you didn't have anything inflammatory on your car. It's just you were broken into.
Yeah, and it's like they didn't steal anything. Like, I have a bunch of tools and stuff in my truck, and they didn't steal nothing. They just busted my window. And apparently I filed a police report, and apparently this has been going on for a couple of days. They got, like 20 reports of the same thing happening.
Vandalism.
So, yeah.
And it's like, what kind of person gets a kick out of just going around and busting other people's stuff?
I don't know. Well, it is strange, but every once in a while you read about that somebody will just go through a neighborhood.
Terror of vandalism.
Yeah, bam, 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 bam. Well,
that's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that.
I am indeed. Okay. Well, thank you. And I'm sorry it happened to you. We got to take a break. We'll be right back.
Karma's a bitch.
Yes. To the people that did it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Peter Hussein Werby and Jalene Hussein. Jordan, I'm...
You're having way too much fun with this.
Well, I'm having trouble formulating it each time. I should write it down or something. All right, we're going to be right back. I'll tell you who's going to be on at 1 a.m. And we got to get the George Carlin thing on. We got some open lines. We'll keep taking it. So should we do it right at the end of the show, or should we...
That might be a good way to end the show.
All right. Yeah. So, okay, well, let's get this on the air, and then we'll get you back at 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
I want you all to know...
Greatest country in the world.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
With election fever in the air, the good citizens of Metro Detroit are making their voices be heard. It's not about the left party or the right party. It's about partying up all summer long with Kid Rock and The Riff. Now, all summer long, 101 WRIF is hooking you up with the all-access pass to Kid Rock out at DTE July 19th, 20th, and 22nd. Here's what you do. Just pick up a WRIF Kid Rock for Summer campaign sign at upcoming Riff events. Display it proudly on your lawn or make your own sign. The bigger, the better. The WRIF Kid Rock for Summer campaign team will be out and about scouring the Motor City for your sign. Display it prominently because you could win big. Keep listening to 101 The Riff for more details on how you could win big all summer long with Kid Rock and 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Hi, this is Mike Kay, the health insurance giant. Whether you're single, a family, small business, self-employed, or on COBRA, Health Insurance Giant is dedicated to providing quality coverage at affordable prices. For several years now, I have been advertising on WRIF and have achieved incredible results. I always know when my commercials are running because I get immediate phone calls and traffic to my website, healthinsurancegiant.com. Calls from the Riff always turn into a quick turnaround meeting with the customer. Once we review their health insurance needs, most of these turn into satisfied, long-term relationships. From the entire staff to the phenomenal lineup of on-air personalities to my rep, Katie, the team at Riff is always readily available with fresh ideas for my commercials that keep the results coming. WRIF has had a strong impact on the growth of my business, and I'm looking forward to advertising on the Riff for many years to come.
Hi, I'm Katie Devereaux from WRIF Sales. Riff doesn't just rock, Riff works for your business. Call me today at 248-591-6836.
This is my car. I don't know how I lived without it.
Muscle car fanatics. Join the Riff Cyber Crew for free today at WRIF.com and get signed up for the Riff Muscle Car Club. Get special invitations for upcoming WRIF Muscle Car Club events with a chance to win Best in Show, Best Paint, Best Engine, and Best Interior. One lucky Riff Muscle Car Club member will be front and center with a Riff at the 2009 Autorama. Sign up now with the Riff Cyber Crew at WRIF.com. It's totally free. The WRIF Muscle Car Club. Brought to you by Glendale Auto Supply. Shop a real auto parts store at 101.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dan Moroff, the owner of the Cherry Hill Dental Center. I've built my practice on being a pioneer in the dental industry, and most importantly, offering all the latest and greatest services at a realistic and affordable price here in Metro Detroit. We offer everything from your best cleaning ever to a complete overhaul of your smile, and most importantly, your confidence. Being a one-office practice, I need to spend my limited advertising dollars carefully, which is why I partner with Brian and WRIF. After learning about my practice, Brian suggested I use my own voice so you could get to know the real me. Cherry Hill Dental Center's Get the Smile message, plus WRIF's responsive audience, have equaled great success for me and my staff.
Thanks, Dr. Dan. If you think your practice or business could benefit from an owner association campaign, give me a call at...
Allow me. Call Brian at 248-591-6832. That's 248-591-6832. Give Brian a call, and trust me, he'll call you back.
Greatly appreciated.
How about those playoff tickets?
With more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit, here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to our final segment. We'll be playing George Carlin tribute, his Ten Commandments bit, which I think is one of his best. You can go to my website and hear the unexpurgated, the uncensored version. We can't do it here on the radio.
I've been watching a lot of things on YouTube, of his bits. And
yeah, that's where I get their links to that.
He's just brilliant.
Yeah, he is.
Was,
and,
sadly enough.
Because apparently the national movement of seems like mostly young people on Facebook and a lot of other blogs, that a lot of young people are starting to call themselves with the middle name of Hussein to stop this right-wing calumny.
That's a good word.
So they're calling themselves like Jane Hussein O'Malley. So I'm calling myself Peter Hussein Werby and Jalene Hussein Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, what the right-wingers are doing, and including Todd, who called in last week, he started this whole thing with us. And and no, we didn't sit around and obsess about it all week. In fact, I forgot about him until he called. Yeah. But they're trying to make it, they're trying to kind of criminalize him in a sense. Yeah. For having the middle name Hussein.
Yeah.
Saying he's a terrorist or whatever.
I mean, when I first heard it, I thought, oh, no, this is not a good middle name to have.
Yeah, because people will latch onto it and do exactly what they've done.
And I was thinking, can enough people be fooled into centering on his middle name and not on policies? Like we were saying earlier, he's way too far to the center for me.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Kucinich would have been the perfect candidate, I think, for the Democrats, and he could have won as well. Now, Todd was also saying that...
Well, I'm sure he's loving that we're talking about him all this time.
The only... There's, what
get
is
your
it?
15 minutes of fame, because you're out of here.
There's all publicity is good publicity as long as they spell your name right.
Right.
Yeah. So Frank writes in... he was talking about... we never talk about the good things in Iraq, which he never managed really. Did he ever even say anything?
Oh, no, it was the Kurds or something about the... No, the Kurds.
That was bad stuff. Well, I guess that we got rid of Saddam. Anyway, Frank writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hi, Peter and Jolene. Christians under Saddam were treated very well. Now Christians have to worship in secret with the threat of assassination and persecution.
Because Saddam was not a Muslim.
Well, he was...
He didn't have any religion in his government, though, right?
He started towards the end getting real, started talking about what a Muslim he is.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't even remember that.
I'm trying to multitask here, Ken.
Okay.
Let me see. Here is this just in. Isn't that what they say on these things?
Yes.
A San Francisco group wants to name a sewage plant after George W. Bush. Did you read that?
No.
Supporters planned synchronized flush of hundreds of thousands of San Francisco toilet on the 25th of... this doesn't make any sense. Oh, yeah, here. A group with the regal-sounding name of the Presidential Memorial Commission of San Francisco is planning to ask voters here to change the name of a prize-winning water treatment plant, which is a sewage plant, on the shoreline to the George W. Bush Sewage Plant. The renaming will take effect on January 20th when the new president is sworn in. And regardless of the measure's outcome, supporters plan to commemorate the inaugural with a synchronized flush of hundreds of thousands of San Francisco toilets, an action that would send a flood of water towards the plant, now called the Oceanside Water Pollution Control Facility.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, for a while, they, it, really who started all this, which culminated in this Bush monstrosity, was Ronald Reagan. And they have these people that want to...
The great communicator?
Yes. They want to have some facility named after Reagan in every county in the country.
Oh, yeah. Now, there is also one for airports, too, wasn't it?
No, there's Reagan.
Reagan in D.C.
Except,
but we call it national.
National, yeah. But yeah. I think it's the... I don't know.
Yeah, they just want some type of... monument to him everywhere, yeah. Right? Okay.
Here's Bill in Fenton, Michigan. Bill, it's Peter and Jolene. Hi, thanks for joining us on WRIF. You're on the air. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I got a question. You were saying that there was nothing positive that came out of Iraq. My name's Bill. I'm from Trenton. I'm actually an Iraqi veteran. I was there in Baghdad from 04 to 05. And I'm just wondering what is your basis on how there is no positive things that have come out of Iraq? Is this from the media?
I am the media. No, that's no, not from. I don't watch the media. I just don't know how. I mean, you got to measure things, right? There's a cost-benefit analysis. If you're sometimes, in order to accomplish something good, there has to be some cost paid. Well, if over 4,000, or now over 4,100 of your fellow soldiers have lost their lives, if tens of thousands of them have head injuries, PTSD, grievous wounds, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis been killed, the physical infrastructure of the country has been destroyed, millions of them are... refugees inside and outside the country, and George Bush sent you guys over there on a pack of lies in order so they could establish oil companies back in there and set up U.S. military bases in the biggest embassy in the world. I would say that any benefit, like get rid of a U.S.-supported dictator like Saddam Hussein, is kind of outweighed by all the bad things. I'm sorry.
Off of it being a pack. Number one, if it's cost effective, how do you put a value when you're talking of cost effective? Okay, on the liberation and the oppression that's been put on them for the past 30 years by Saddam Hussein, which, as you agree as I do, was a dictator.
Well, but there's international law, and the United States isn't like exactly the Lone Ranger that has the right to go around the world and take out dictators. But besides, that's not why the United States said they were going over there. They said that the Bush and Rumsfeld and the rest of those liars said that we were facing an imminent threat of a country with weapons of mass destruction. Now, most of us, good numbers of us here, let me say, knew that that was a pack of lies, that Saddam had no army worthy of the name, that they had no weapons of mass destruction, and there was an opportunity for that war never to occur, and that could have very well led to the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. When the UN inspectors were in there in early 2003, and they said, we're not finding anything. There's nothing here. Remember, Colin Powell went to the United Nations and lied his ass off about all these poison gases and other stuff like that. And the UN inspectors say there's nothing here. There's nothing here. And Bush knew, and Rumsfeld knew, and Cheney knew. If they allowed the inspectors to do their job, they would have proved that there were no weapons of mass destruction. But the United States under George W. Bush wanted to invade
invade Iraq. They thought it, they didn't think it was going to be like this. They were so stupid, they thought guys like you would not suffer any particular amount of injuries. It would be like Gulf War
One. If the UN, I mean, come on, honestly, if Kofi Annan, what was it, his son that got caught taking vouchers?
I don't get what that's all about. There were United Nations inspectors. There were no weapons of mass destruction. Bush was joking about it. While you were over there with people shooting at you and you shooting at them, he was at this press club joking about, well, I don't find any under here. I'm looking over here for some weapons of mass destruction. Come on, man, you're a pawn in the game.
No, it's not a pawn in the game. Number one, if it's over there for all the oil, I mean, are we seeing any difference in there? Number two, okay, even being over there.
They don't want cheap oil. They want expensive oil. They want to control oil. I mean, look at I forgot how many years ago, 35, 40 years ago, the Iraqi government nationalized all the oil over there and threw the Western companies out. They now are going back in. It was a war for oil. It is a war for oil.
If it's a war for oil, okay, if we've already put in their precedent now, okay, don't you think there would have been a little, I scratch your back, you scratch my back, like there would be a little difference?
Yes. They don't want cheap oil. They want expensive oil.
Okay, being a veteran, the way I see it, okay, if I'm over there and, okay, we'll say a lot of terrorist groups, Muslims, they're coming from the Middle East, correct? You agree with me?
Yeah.
Well, now there's more than ever because of what we created.
Yeah, they're totally pissed off at us, right?
Well,
more than ever.
Please.
Yeah.
We got a foothold in the Middle East right now in Iraq.
Wait. Why do we want a foothold in somebody else's country and someone else's region? What if there were Russians talking about we got to get a foothold in Mexico? And what if China was fighting a war in Canada and off the coast of the United States? How do you think we'd feel? Pretty bad. All right. I'm sorry you had to go through that. I don't aim this at you as a person. I'm sure you went at it with,
You did what you were told.
You did what you were told. And it may sound insulting to say that you're a pawn in their game, but when you have these ultra-rich, frontmen.
Chicken hawks.
Guys, by the way, all of them that scammed out of going to war in Vietnam want to send people like you and the other men and women that have lost their lives there in order to get oil companies back in there. I don't know how else to say it more kindly, so I'm sorry if I was insulting. Thank you. Appreciate your call. We're going to have to get to let me see. Okay, I want to get this caller on. Here's Tom and Warren. Tom, hi, it's Peter and Julian. You're on the air. Tom.
Yeah, this is Tom, yeah. Oh, you got all your talking going there. I've been listening to you and everything. But one thing people don't understand, the word genocide.
Yeah.
Okay? That nobody should be able to do that. We went over there. I don't. Weapons of mass destruction, they weren't there. Okay, but we took out somebody that genocide. A whole, let's just say a whole nation.
Well, you know, he didn't do that. Genocide means the elimination of a genus, like the Germans tried to do to the Jews, or that the American or the European invaders did to the native people of this nation. But regardless, there are procedures within international law. Bush committed a crime against peace under international law. The United States was not being threatened by Iraq. No country in the Middle East was being threatened by Iraq. Not one country said anything about it. Saudi Arabia didn't think it was being threatened. Israel didn't think it was being threatened. Jordan didn't. You know, wherever you go, Iran didn't think it was being threatened. This was a fabricated war. So just what I was saying to the last guy. So the United States could get its favored corporations in there to begin to suck oil and profits out of there and to have forward bases, including the largest embassy in the world. But so what happened? Rather than sending all these troops to Afghanistan, where the man who engineered 9/11 that Bush let happen and quickly bringing that to a conclusion has now created a war on two fronts. We spent $850 billion, and I don't know how things are going in Warren. I don't think probably any better than they are in my suburb. Instead of using that almost $1 trillion to support our country, It's gone to all of Bush's buddies in Halliburton and KBR and the rest of it. It's been a total disaster, and we're going to wind up paying for it for probably the next 30 years. Get rid of a dictator? Hey, there's lots of dictators. Most of them were supported by the United States, including Saddam Hussein, until he didn't work out too well by us. All right, here's Wayne. Wayne is in Whitmore Lake. Hi, Wayne. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to change the subject a little bit,
sure.
Make it a little local.
Yeah, sure.
In Livingston County, we had a pit bull attacks last year,
yeah,
where two people were killed.
Yeah, I know. I know. I read about that.
Right. I was attacked by a pit bull, myself,
wow,
and my dog.
Wow.
And it caused damage to my dog. He had to have surgery.
Yeah.
And I wrote certified letters to these people and give them time to, I asked them for payment for vet bills and all this stuff, and no answer from them. They don't want to admit they have a dog.
Wow. Were they pets, or were they used for other purposes, like fighting? Were they taught to fight? Or
no, the story that I got is, I got this from management of the park where I live. The daughter was at the father's house with the boyfriend's pit bull.
Mm-hmm.
She put it on the father's dog's chain, which is, small.
Yeah.
He broke the chain he was on. I had to punch this dog 5 times to keep him away from my dog. I had to pull my dog out of his jaws.
Yeah, once they get locked on, I'm surprised that you're able to even get him off. Well, I'll tell you, Wayne, it doesn't look like these people are going to do the thing that is right. I mean, you ought to really just think about getting a lawyer. I mean, you know, there's always been, there seems to be always bad dogs. Like the bad dogs now are pit bulls, right? But at certain times they were German Shepherds, the other time
they were
Doberman.
I have one that lives at my house,
yeah,
a pit bull, who's nicer than my dachshund.
You know what?
And he's like 11 years old.
I have such a prejudice against pit bulls.
I met this dog.
You can tell me all you want about that dog. I would not let our dog anywhere near.
Dog. And your wife wants to bring your dog over, so you better tell her not to.
Man. Yeah, get a lawyer. It sounds like you need one. Let's see here. Here's Steve. Steve's in Detroit. What's up, Steve?
Hi, Peter and Julene. I want to get back to something a little bit lighter. You're talking about the movie Spartacus earlier?
Right, we were.
Okay, I disagree with you. Actually, it's full of good acting. The thing about the accents, it shows that the Romans got slaves from all over the world at that time.
Okay.
So there was a guy with Scottish or Irish accents and all those other accents.
All right, I'll stand.
But it's a great movie. I recommend it to the younger people that probably don't even know about it.
I'll stand corrected on it. But Charlton Heston's not in that, is he?
No, he's not in that. Kurt Douglas, Gene Simmons, Peter Ustinov, Jack Palance, Tony Curtis, and Laurence Olivier.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it was...
Laurence Olivier, one of the great actors of the 20th century.
Yeah, see, Kurt Douglas was at the zenith of his career in the late 50s. He could do anything he wanted, so he pushed for these controversial movies. And a lot of people don't realize Spartacus was very controversial. I can't remember the names, but there were blacklisted writers that contributed to it. They used false names and stuff. So
yeah,
very controversial.
It was, yeah, you're right. It was about the revolt of the oppressed, and the conservative dominance of that time felt that it was too radical.
Yeah, disguised in a older genre.
Well, they were correct. Right?
Yeah, so it's a perfect movie for 4th of July. It celebrates freedom of individuals.
There you go. So Kirk Douglas, Tony Curtis, Laurence Olivier. Now I'm beginning to remember. I haven't seen that in years and years, but I might check it out.
Yeah, he's the evil emperor.
Oh, that's right. All right. I'll take the correction, Steve. I appreciate it.
Oh, I knew you would. All right, enjoy your show.
All right, thank you so much. Okay, we've got a couple of you stranded, but I want to play this George Carlin as a tribute to one of America's great, not just comic, but social critics. And can we just play it and say goodnight to everybody?
Play it and say,
all right,
we won't see you next week.
Oh, yeah, we're off. I meant to say that all day. Yeah, we got the 4th of July weekend off, so we're not going to be on that for 2 weeks. So we'll talk to you then. It's Peter Hussein Werby and Jolene
Hussein Jordan.
Yeah.
And Al, who I don't think is going to play in our game, but thanks for answering the phones right. and setting up all of our production for us, Al.
All right, so here's, let me make sure that I got the right one here. This is George Carlin, the Ten Commandments.
Now, folks, here's something else I got a problem with. The Ten Commandments, you know? Yeah, yeah, let me tell you. Listen, here's my problem. Why are there ten? You don't need ten. I think the list of commandments was deliberately and artificially inflated to get it up to ten. It's a padded list. Here's what they did. About 5,000 years ago, a bunch of religious and political hustlers got together to try to figure out how to control people, how to keep them in line. They knew people were basically stupid and would believe anything they were told, so they announced that God had given them some commandments. Up on a mountain, when no one was around, God had given them the Ten Commandments. But let me ask you this. When they were sitting around making this shit up, why did they pick ten? Why ten? Why not nine or 11? I'll tell you why. Because ten sounds official. Ten sounds important. They knew if it was 11, people wouldn't take it seriously. So what, are you kidding me? The 11 commandments? Get the fuck out of here. But ten. Ten sounds important. Ten is the basis for the decimal system. It's a decade. It's a psychologically satisfying number. The top ten, the ten most wanted, the ten best dressed. So having ten commandments was really a marketing decision. And to me, it's clearly a bullshit list. It's a political document artificially inflated to sell better. I'm going to show you how you could reduce the number of commandments and come up with a list that's a little more workable and logical. We're going to start with the first three, and I'll use the Roman Catholic version because those are the ones I was taught as a little boy. I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not have strange gods before me. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Thou shalt keep holy the Sabbath. Right off the bat, the first three, pure bullshit. Sabbath day, Lord's name, strange gods. Spooky language. Designed to scare and control primitive people. In no way does superstitious nonsense like this apply to the lives of intelligent, civilized humans in the 21st century. You throw out the first three commandments, you're down to seven. Next, honor thy father and mother. Obedience, respect for authority. Just another name for controlling people. The truth is, obedience and respect should not be automatic. They should be earned. They should be based on the parents' performance. Parents' performance. All right? Some parents deserve respect. Most of them don't. Period. You're down to six. Now, in the interest of logic, something religion is very uncomfortable with, we're going to jump around the list a little bit. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness. Stealing and lying. Well, actually, these two both prohibit the same kind of behavior. Dishonesty, stealing, and lying. So you don't need two of them. Instead, you combine them and you call it thou shalt not be dishonest. And suddenly, you're down to five. And as long as we're combining, I have two others that belong together. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Once again, these two prohibit the same kind of behavior. In this case, marital infidelity. The difference is coveting takes place in the mind. And I don't think you should outlaw fantasizing about someone else's wife. Otherwise, what's a guy going to think about when he's waxing his carrot? But marital fidelity is a good idea, so we're going to keep the idea and call this one, thou shalt not be unfaithful. And suddenly, we're down to four. But when you think about it, honesty and fidelity are really part of the same overall value. So in truth, you could combine the two honesty commandments with the two fidelity commandments and give them simpler language, positive language instead of negative, and call the whole thing, thou shalt always be honest and faithful, and we're down to three. Thou shalt, they're going away fast. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. This one is just plain f***ing stupid. Coveting your neighbor's goods is what keeps the economy going. All right? Your neighbor gets a vibrator that plays "Oh Come All Ye Faithful." You want to get one too. Coveting creates jobs. Leave it alone.
You throw out coveting, and you're down to two now, the big honesty and fidelity commandment, and the one we haven't talked about yet, thou shalt not kill, murder, the fifth commandment. But when you think about it, religion has never really had a big problem with murder. Not really. More people have been killed in the name of God than for any other reason. All you have to do... All you have to do is look at Northern Ireland, the Middle East, Kashmir, the Inquisition, the Crusades, and the World Trade Center to see how seriously the religious folks take thou shalt not kill. The more devout they are, the more they see murder as being negotiable. It's negotiable. You know? It depends. It depends on who's doing the killing and who's getting killed. So, with all of this in mind, I leave you with my revised list of the two commandments. Thou shalt always be honest and faithful to the provider of thy nookie. And thou shalt try real hard not to kill anyone, unless, of course, they pray to a different invisible man from the one you pray to. Two is all you need. Moses could have carried him down the hill in his f***ing pocket. And if they had a list like that, I wouldn't mind those folks in Alabama putting it up on the courthouse wall. As long as they included one additional commandment, thou shalt keep thy religion to thyself. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's our tribute to George Carlin. We got an interview coming up right after these.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice.
What if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of an emergency.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Shinedown returns. Shinedown with special guest Theory of a Dead Man and Blackstone Cherry, July 26th at the Fillmore Detroit. Tickets available right now at all Ticketmaster outlets. But keep your radio locked at 101 WRIF for the most free tickets for Shinedown, interviews with the band, and more.
Hey, what's up? This is Brent from Shinedown, and you're rocking with 101 WRIF.
The biggest threat to freedom isn't the next corporation involved in a scandal. It's not covert government operations or even politicians. The most immediate, persistent, avoidable threat to your freedom is you. You're the only one that can keep yourself from voting, from writing a letter to your congressman, from reading a newspaper. Listen, take advantage of your rights. Learn how at explorefreedomusa.org. Your freedom thrives only when you use it. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Look at all the cars. Lots of colored cars. Ah, there's a blue one. Isn't it pretty? Ooh, look how fast that red one's going. It's red like that stop sign. Like my jacket.
This 38-year-old man may sound a little strange to you and me.
Vroom, vroom, vroom.
But to his 2-year-old son who's interested in cars and colors, he makes perfect sense.
That's the sound cars make.
When you talk with your child, you build vocabulary, and learning starts long before school does. So follow their lead. Take simple everyday moments, like eating dinner or just watching cars go by, and turn them into learning moments.
Ooh, look, red car.
Yes, and it's moving awfully fast.
Blue car.
Yes, the man in the red car is about to meet the man in the blue car. Get himself a pretty pink ticket.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. For more tips, go to bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riff rock.
The way you want it.
See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Super Tuesday on 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. It's a pleasure to be with you. Peter Werby here.
It's not exactly a new subject to start talking about the price of gasoline. We all are facing over $4 a gallon. We hear very frightening stories about what it could go up to. The whole idea, though, of a society that is fueled by energy, particularly oil-based energy, is very challenging to what we're going to be facing in the future. And there's been so much discussion about it on the news stations, on the cables. Certainly a lot written about it in the newspapers, but never enough for me to satisfy my information level that wants to be as deep as possible. And when it comes to energy issues and we want deep explanations, I go to Professor Michael Clare. He's professor of peace and world security studies in Hampshire College. He's the author of a brand new book, Rising Powers, Shrinking Planet, the New Geopolitics of Energy. It's published by Macmillan, and we've interviewed him any number of times on this program, and I'm looking through the enormous number of books and articles he's published, trying to remember which. I think the last one was Resource Wars, The New Landscape of Global Conflict. That was 7 years ago. Let's bring in Michael Clare. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure to be with you, Peter.
Well, this, I don't even know if we have to set the foundation for this, but it's pretty easy to say, hey, this is all George Bush's fault. When he came in, oil was about $30 a barrel, and now it's over 130. Is it all George Bush's fault?
No, not really. I mean, the fundamentals are that more and more countries are increasing their demand for oil, especially China, India, and other developing countries, and the world supply is narrowing as we approach the peak of world production and go into decline. What I blame George Bush and Vice President Cheney for is a failure to take corrective measures when they had the chance in 2001, when President Bush asked Cheney to head up the energy panel, the National Energy Development Policy Group in 2001, and to take a look at our energy predicament and come up with solutions. And instead of saying that the age of petroleum is drawing to a close and we have to start developing new sources of energy, they said, let's go full steam ahead with oil. Let's increase our dependence on oil. And so we're in a worse situation today than we were in 2001. I blame them for that.
Well, it all happened so quickly. In 2000, we were the single superpower, and what the American century was going to be, the 21st century, and suddenly we're worried about being some backwater power that literally only has a military.
Well, it's true that a lot happened quickly, but this could have been foreseen in 2000 and 2001. It was already becoming evident that China would become a major oil consumer back then. As their economy took off, it was becoming very evident they would need a lot of oil. And at the same time, people were warning about the imminent peaking of world oil production. People were saying that at the rate we were going, we would soon reach a point where the oil producers would not be able to increase oil production anymore. And it looks like we've come to that point today. It looks very much like we are at the point, either this year or next year or maybe in 2010, when we will reach the point where it's no longer possible to increase world oil production. We'll be at a plateau for a while, and then the world oil supply will go into decline. So these things were predictable in 2001 when Bush and Cheney took office, and they did absolutely nothing to prepare us for this predicament.
Well, we're concerned, all of us, about what this impact of this price of oil has meant to all of us in our economies and in our individual economies. If we think of it in a manner, it's like a large tax on us that's going to the oil-producing countries and to the refiners here that eventually sell us the gasoline. So it has worked out well for some people, for some countries, and for some companies. Obviously, there's a lot of people making a lot of money off of us paying a lot more.
Yes, this is the unfortunate truth. in the situation. There are winners in the run-up in oil prices. Certainly not you and me. I'm very aware of the loss in my standard of living, and I'm sure the overwhelming majority of your listeners are in the same position. But the major oil-producing countries are making a fortune off of this, and maybe you've heard of the rise of these so-called sovereign wealth funds, the accounts created by the oil-producing countries, especially in the Middle East, to take the petrodollars we send them and to reinvest that money in the United States, buying up our most valuable assets and using it as an additional source of income. So they're getting doubly wealthy, and this represents one of the greatest transfers of wealth in human history, and I'm sure it's going to have political impact as well in the years ahead as the oil-producing countries become even more wealthy at our expense.
Well, now we're looking at a situation where in order to produce a barrel of oil, it's nowhere near what it is currently, over $130. Where's all that come? What jacks up the price? I mean, we hear a lot about speculation and what have you. Why? Well, for instance, I was in Caracas, and the gasoline there was 14 cents a gallon. It's $2 and I think 80 cents in Mexico or something like that. Why this great divergence?
Now, the places where the price of oil is so low is because it's subsidized by the governments for political reasons. Venezuela subsidizes the price of oil. They're actually losing money, and you see that in other countries where oil producers subsidize oil as well. And some developing countries, India and China and Indonesia, have been subsidizing the price of oil as well. It doesn't mean it's that cheap to produce. It is true that in countries like Saudi Arabia, Iran, and a number of other Middle Eastern countries, the price of production is very low. But the days in which oil production is cheap are coming to an end, because we're running out of so-called easy oil, where you just stick a drill in the ground and it comes gushing out, like you see in the movie There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm.
Those days are over because we've used up all of the world's easy oil. From now on, whatever's left of oil is going to be very difficult to produce and very expensive. For example, the new fields discovered off the coast of Brazil. This is the only giant new discovery of the past 10 years or so. Some of your listeners may have read about these new discoveries in Brazilian waters. This is hundreds of miles offshore. It's a mile deep water, and then several miles beneath the bottom of the ocean. It's going to be very, very expensive to produce, require very complex technology. This is not going to be cheap oil.
And the equipment isn't there, is it?
No. This is going to take 10 years at least before they're ready to produce a barrel of oil. And people are talking about drilling in the Arctic. You've probably heard about that as well. This will be even more complicated and expensive to produce. That's because we've run out of all of the easy, cheap oil, and what's left will be very difficult to produce.
Well, one of the things that I how talk show hosts always have glib answers, I always just say, look, conservation, alternative energy, problem solved, and no nukes. Would that do it?
I'm afraid it's going to be a tough transition for us, Peter. The transition to a post-petroleum economy will not be easy, and I think most of your listeners understand that fully well. As I say, if we had started in 2001 instead of 2009, it would have been a lot easier today. We would have been much further along that path. Now we have to start at a much harder point along the path, but we will have to make this transition. There's no choice in the matter. And it will be costly, and it will be difficult. But yes, conservation will be absolutely crucial. the development of renewables will be crucial because we've used up most of the non-renewable fuels on the planet. So there's a lot that we can do and will have to do, but this is not going to be an easy transition. You know, on the other hand, I think that Americans are very resilient and are very smart, and they understand we have to make these moves.
I think we maybe could even talk a little more about that at the end of this broadcast. Michael Clare is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's a professor of peace and world security studies at Hampshire College in Massachusetts. He's the author of the brand new book, Rising Power, Shrinking Planet, which is what we're talking about, the new geopolitics of energy. You also wrote, and we spoke to you about 7 years ago, about your book, Resource Wars, the New Landscape of Global Conflict. What's the connection here? I like geopolitics a lot better than resource wars, or are they not separatable?
Well, geopolitics, the new geopolitics of energy that I write about in my new book is how the major powers of today, the United States, Japan, Russia, China, and the European countries, are all jockeying for advantage on a planet where resources are becoming increasingly scarce and are using military means, by which I mean arms transfers, military alliances, military assistance agreements, to establish ties with friendly governments in order to gain access to their resources. And this can prove to be exceedingly dangerous when the U.S. is competing with China for access, for example, to Africa's energy. The U.S. is competing with Russia for control over the energy of the Caspian Sea Basin. All of these rivalries and competitive struggles are increasing the risk of conflict in various parts of the world. That's what I mean by the geopolitics of energy. And there's so much more that could be said about that. All the hotspots in the world are being affected by this geopolitical struggle.
Yet it only seems like the United States is fighting a hot war for resources, and I think of where the United States is currently fighting in Asia and in the Middle East, and if it was similarly, if for instance Russia or China was fighting a war in Mexico or in Canada, as we are on the borders of Russia and in the same bailiwick or in Afghanistan, I don't think the United States would be very happy. Yet it seems those powers kind of think we're doing what we've done for the last 100 years or so.
You know, Peter, there would be such an interesting conversation that we could have. Yes, the United States is fighting a hot war in Iraq and in Afghanistan, obviously, but China is indirectly involved in a variety of low-level wars in other parts of the world. For example, China is a major arms supplier to the Sudanese government, which is obviously fighting a war in Darfur against the rebels there, and it uses Chinese equipment and Chinese military assistance to suppress the Darfur rebels. And Russia is involved in supplying the breakaway regions of Abkhazia and South Ossetia in the Republic of Georgia, while the United States is supporting the Georgian government. And you have a Russian base in that area. You have American bases in that area. It feels very much like pre-World War I Balkans to me. So there are ways in which the U.S., Russia, and China are in a kind of a Cold War like atmosphere in many parts of the world today.
I've been neglectful in mentioning Michael Clare's latest book, Rising Power, Shrinking Planet, the New Geopolitics of Energy. It's available from Macmillan, There's a link at Macmillan. There'll also be a link on my site, Peter Werbe, werbe.com, as we go along. At some point, it's interesting you mention the analogy of World War One, where at some point everyone knew a war was coming. They just weren't sure that what would spark it. But given the amount of weaponry that the major powers have, and so overwhelmingly on at least the conventional weapons that the United States has, it seems that an actual conflict between these major powers seems, hopefully, knock on plastic here, that would never occur.
Well, I certainly think that that's what logic would say, and I don't think anybody in Washington, Moscow, or Beijing is consciously planning for a war between them. But that doesn't stop the leaders in these countries from engaging in behavior that makes the risk of war greater. And I say this because they're all providing arms to local tyrants and local warlords who are engaging in conflict or in provocative behaviors that is inflammatory. For example, the Russians are backing these breakaway warlords in Abkhazia and South Ossetia right across the border from an American base in Georgia. This is very provocative behavior. That the Chinese and the Russians last summer conducted war games in Central Asia through the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They basically told the United States to vacate its base in Kyrgyzstan. We, meanwhile, keep on providing lots of weapons to the Middle Eastern countries. We say we're going to remain in the area forever, it seems to me. So there isn't a lot of indication that any of these countries are engaging in behavior that makes war less likely.
Yeah, it certainly the contest for resources is nothing new. That's been much of what's driven wars in the past. You rarely mention India, and I know at some point, I don't know if this is your phrase, Chindia, China and India.
Yes.
Yeah. In your book, Rising Powers, Shrinking Planet, do you think they see us? Is there any indication in what comes out of their literature that they see the United States essentially as history, or at least in the sense that the British Empire once was the dominant world power and it shrunk considerably over the last 100 years? Do they think it's kind of all over for us?
I don't think anybody in their right mind thinks that the United States is past history. I do think that they believe that the United States as the sole superpower, that those days are over. They see the world as a much more competitive struggle in which the United States is one of many, not many, but one of several major powers all struggling for influence. And the Chinese would believe that, in the next 50 years, China will be one of the great powers along with the United States and Europe. And the Indians believe that in that time, India will also rise to be one of the great powers. And they don't necessarily think that this has to lead to conflict. But on the other hand, they believe that it might lead to conflict, and therefore they have to build up their military forces in order to protect themselves in the event that war would break out, and they have to ensure that they have an adequate supply of vital resources, especially energy resources, so that the United States cannot cut off their supply of resources. And this, I'm afraid, is leading to a global struggle today over oil and natural gas that could prove to be the spark for a future conflict between the U.S. and China.
I wonder if India and China, with enormous populations, could actually create an industrial infrastructure that could create both what we have here in terms of military and also of consumer goods. I, and automobiles that have to be run on petroleum products. It doesn't seem even materially possible. The planet would probably collapse if the rest of the world, or good sections, billions more people began to live like we do here in the United States.
Well, this is a great worry, Peter, and you're absolutely right to raise this question. I don't think it's possible for this planet to provide an American standard of living as we understand it for a China and an India with their population as it's expected to be at our standard of living. I just don't think it's possible. When you consider that in this country we have essentially one automobile for every adult in this country, and in China and India today, they probably have, I'm making this number up, but it's the right order of magnitude, about one automobile for every 100 adults. Mm-hmm. But if they were to have one for every adult, and they have five times as many adults as we do, you can start doing the math, and you could figure out that the supply of oil that's left would disappear in about 2 or 3 years.
Sure. Michael Clary, at the beginning, or maybe towards the middle of our conversation, we were talking about what could have been done if we would have recognized this problem as it was defined by many, including yourself. In 2000, we would have had an 8-year, 9-year jump on things. Now we're going to be hopeful that there's a new administration that will address these problems. And yet, the dominant paradigms, the ruling models of how people function, they rarely ever altered except in times of catastrophe. There's just so much invested in things as they are. Are you hopeful that either presidential candidate, given what they've said so far, I mean, including offering a $300 million a bonus for anyone who can develop a great battery, that things will change significantly?
Yes, I am hopeful. I'm hopeful because I've been traveling around the country these past few months on a national book tour for my new book, and I've spoken to audiences, you know, across country, north, south, east, and west, and I get the sense that the American public is very eager to see changes in our national energy policy, and I think that desire is bubbling upwards, and that the presidential candidates are getting the message. So both John McCain and Barack Obama, I think, are beginning to reflect that desire in their statements. Every day they come out with new proposals, like the one you just mentioned that came from John McCain for a new battery. And Barack Obama has been coming forward with a variety of proposals of his own. I think this reflects the desire of the public that they move even more swiftly to new energy proposals. So I am hopeful that the next administration and the next Congress, because Congress will ultimately have to vote the bills, the new measures, will move much more swiftly in the necessary direction to adopt the measures that will be needed to move beyond petroleum to a much more sustainable energy program.
Michael Clare, if Barack Obama or John McCain was to come to you and say, I need some concrete proposals. We're going to have a 100-day crash program, like so often is done with new administrations, to really alter the path of dependence on petroleum. Are there general ballpark suggestions you could make or specific ones?
Yes, I think you have to do two things. You have to cut down our demand for petroleum through conservation. And I hate to say this because we all love to drive rapidly, and I'm no different from anybody else. But one of the fastest ways to reduce consumption is to lower the speed limit wherever possible. You know, and also to get more buses out onto the streets to get people out of their cars. Those could be done very swiftly, and they'd reduce our demand for petroleum. That would be number one. Number two, and Barack Obama has said this, is to take off the table the option of going to war with Iran, because it's every time President Bush makes a threat of attacking Iran, the price of oil jumps. because the oil speculators think that an attack on Iran is going to lead to $200 or $250 a barrel oil. And if we keep talking that way, we're going to create a self-fulfilling prophecy here. So let's just say we're not going to do that, and the price of oil will come down. That's another thing we could do.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, and there are so many other suggestions, many of them contained in a brand-new book by Michael Clare, the author of Rising Power, Shrinking Planet, The New Geopolitics of Energy. It's available from Macmillan, the publisher, and there'll be a link on my website as well, peterwerby.com. Michael Clare, thanks again for being on the program.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Hi, this is Mike Kay, the health insurance giant. Whether you're single, a family, small business, self-employed, or on COBRA, Health Insurance Giant is dedicated to providing quality coverage at affordable prices. For several years now, I have been advertising on WRIF and have achieved incredible results. I always know when my commercials are running because I get immediate phone calls and traffic to my website, healthinsurancegiant.com. Calls from the RIF always turn into a quick turnaround meeting with the customer. Once we review their health insurance needs, most of these turn into satisfied, long-term relationships. From the entire staff to the phenomenal lineup of on-air personalities to my rep, Katie, the team at RIF is always readily available with fresh ideas for my commercials that keep the results coming. WRIF has had a strong impact on the growth of my business, and I'm looking forward to advertising on the RIF for many years to come.
Hi, I'm Katie Devereaux from WRIF Sales. RIF doesn't just rock, RIF works for your business. Call me today at 248-591-6836.
Weekday nights at 10 with Meltdown. It's like getting hit in the head by a 2x4 with a nail in it. Mandatory Metallica. Now, it's your triple play of the mighty Metallica with a big unit every weekday night at 10, exclusively from your one and only Metallica station. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dan Moroff, the owner of the Cherry Hill Dental Center. I built my practice on being a pioneer in the dental industry, and most importantly, offering all the latest and greatest services at a realistic and affordable price here in Metro Detroit. We offer everything from your best cleaning ever to a complete overhaul of your smile, and most importantly, your confidence. Being a one-office practice, I need to spend my limited advertising dollars carefully, which is why I partnered with Brian and WRIF. After learning about my practice, Brian suggested I use my own voice so you could get to know the real me. Cherry Hill Dental Center's Get the Smile message, plus WRIF's responsive audience, have equaled great success for me and my staff.
Thanks, Dr. Dan. If you think your practice or business could benefit from an owner association campaign, give me a call at...
Allow me. Call Brian at 248-591-6832. That's 248-591-6832. Give Brian a call, and trust me, he'll call you back.
Greatly appreciated.
How about those playoff tickets?
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. One of the things we've tried to do here on the Peter Werby Show over the years now is to get to the bottom of things, to get a core understanding so we're not always just flipped around by the headlines of today, to get a broader understanding of issues so when an issue of the day occurs, we can fit that within a framework. And the book I have in front of me, I think, is excellent for that. It's called The Political Economy of U.S. Militarism, and its author is Ismail Hossein-Zadeh. He is a professor of economics at Drake University. He's an Iranian-born Kurd, and his published work covers significant topics such as long waves of economic expansion and decline, economic crises, restructuring policies and currency trade relations, NAFTA, labor, third world debt, everything along this line. And if you're thinking, whoa, boy, that's a lot to swallow, it is. But the results of it, we are swallowing every day as people, as individual citizens, so we better understand this fully. So it's a pleasure to welcome to the Peter Werby Show Ismail Hossein-Zadeh. Thank you for joining us.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity, and my greetings to your listeners, of course, as well.
Well, maybe we could begin. I don't know if it's the best way to begin with a technical discussion, but just so people understand the phrase, the political economy of U.S. militarism. If it said the economics, that might be easily to understand. But what does it mean to say the political economy of U.S. militarism?
Well, it basically means how war and military spending has become a means or a way to redistribute national income or national resources in favor of what might be called beneficiaries of war, something that the late President Eisenhower famously called the military-industrial complex, especially the industrial part of that, that is conglomerates that produce military hardware. So this is basically the politics of military spending, or the how military spending drains national resources away and hollow out U.S. Treasury, that is tax dollars, in favor of a handful of war profiteers.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think, hopefully, almost all our listeners are familiar with, as you said, that famous phrase by President Eisenhower about the military-industrial complex. But I'm not sure that the picture is extraordinarily clear. I wonder if you could set that within both an historical context, what President Eisenhower was talking about as he left office at the end of the 1950s, and what it looks like today.
Mm-hmm. Well, surely. Well, historically, the United States was for a long time, starting from George Washington all the way to World War II, was very anti-militaristic. That is, it was against a large military establishment in the time of peace. And that's why after any war, and the United States has had many of them, after any war, they downsized or demobilized the wartime military apparatus to pre-war level. And not surprisingly, on the eve of World War II, we had only 139,000 military personnel. That's quite small.
Sure. Wow. I didn't know that.
Yes. But after World War II, especially during the war, as our economy became militarized and the military expanded because of the war, then there were people both within the ranks, high ranks of the military, as well as within the industry, major industries that handsomely benefited from the war. It was like a eureka, as if war can be very profitable. So they resisted demobilization after the war. But FDR overcame that resistance and succeeded to demobilize in 1945 back to pre-war levels. But that demobilization was short-lived or ephemeral. And soon after that, that is 3 years later or 4 years later, in 1949, beneficiaries of war or war industries mobilized around the issue of Cold War and forced President Truman to remilitarize drastically. And that pace continues to this day, that remilitarization and expansion of military establishment, to the extent that now we have one-third of the entire federal budget going to the Pentagon. And that includes everything. But if you leave Social Security and Medicare aside, that is, if you leave only what is called discretionary budget, out of discretionary budget, more than 50%, in fact, it is 58 cents in this current year that just started, 58 cents out of every dollar would go to Pentagon, and only 42 cents would go to everything else, health, education, the environment, job training, you name it.
Yeah.
So So this is a big, big change. And President Eisenhower saw this ominous development, and that's why he warned that the day might come that war and military adventures abroad might be prompted not so much by our national security or national interests, but by profit imperatives or by the need to make money.
Well, I think that's the key to it. Let's back up into that. I think most people, maybe I shouldn't speak for everyone, but lots of people think that the expansion of the military was necessary, as you said, to protect American interests and for our national security. So after World War II, rather than the demobilization that you spoke of, we were told that there was this Soviet threat. So we needed this enormous war machine. And then when the Soviet Union fell apart, there was no reduction in it, but then we discovered that terrorism was a threat to the extent that a large military apparatus was still needed, even though the people that that take part in these activities, such as 9/11, probably only represent in the low thousands. So the idea that most people would say, look, let's spend whatever we have to in order to protect ourselves. Everything else, of course, is important: schools and roads and Social Security and all that. But the key factor, and I would think in most people's thinking, would be that we have security from attack. So that was a long question. We have discovered enemies along the line necessitating a large military-industrial complex, would the argument would go.
Well, that's the issue of security, while very important, but it also can be misleading, because even assuming that there was a real threat of communism during the Cold War, although in my book I show that that threat was more perceived than real, because there is evidence that the Soviet Union, especially in the immediate post-World War II, under the leadership of Joseph Stalin, it was desperate to live and let live. In other words, they were begging for peaceful coexistence. But even assuming that, leaving the Cold War period aside, when the Soviet Union collapsed, You probably remember, many people were excited about the prospects of what came to be known as peace dividends.
Right.
Meaning a redirection of part of Pentagon budget towards non-military public spending or social spending. And that prospect of downsizing the Pentagon and reducing its budget scared those who benefit from military spending, and as a result, they mobilized and carried out a report in the early 1990s, 1991, 1992, under President Bush Sr., and they came up with this alarming document, which came to be known as Defense Planning Guidance. Defense Planning Guidance was put together by Dick Cheney, who was Secretary of Defense at the time, and Paul Wolfowitz, his assistant at that time, and a number of others, like Scooter Libby.
Mm-hmm.
So that document, surprisingly, has all the major issues and the strategies and points that the current administration has been following. In other words, most of President George W. Bush's foreign policy and military policies can be found in a document which was written not in response to the collapse of World Trade Center, not in response to the heinous attacks of 9/11, but in response to the collapse of the Berlin Wall, in response to the demands for peace dividends. All major issues like regime change, preemptive strike, global terrorism, they are all discussed in that document, which was published in 1992. Bill Clinton basically ignored that document. Not surprisingly, the military establishment didn't like him much. So, but when he left the White House and President George W. Bush arrived in the White House, they dusted off that document and replaced Dick Cheney's name with Donald Rumsfeld's name and called it the Bush Doctrine. A doctrine which, in fact, in 1992 was sometimes called Paul Wolfowitz's doctrine. So you see, most of the recent enemies or so-called enemies like rogue states, Axis of Evil, global terrorism, even Islamic fascism they call, or radical Islam, it's no accident that all these new, let's say, boogeymen or new threats came to existence after the collapse of the Soviet Union, because they are needed as substitutes for the threat of communism.
So, and to justify $500 billion a year in military spending. My guest is Ismail Hossein Zada. He is the author of The Political Economy of U.S. Militarism. It's published by Palgrave Macmillan. And there'll be a link on my site to it, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, peterwerbe.com. And I just wanted to just reemphasize something that Professor Hossein Zada said, and that is about military spending after World War II. From everything that I've been able to read, particularly since the collapse of the Soviet Union, there's nothing to indicate that the Soviet Union ever had any intention of attacking the United States nor Western Europe. So much of what was spent, much of the fears, the nuclear fears and all that, was really for naught, but it fed, as Professor Hossein Zada says, the military machine. Let's go back, though, a little, because you're a professor of economics at Drake University, and talk about the role that the spending has. Now, we don't want to get too technical, but the theories of the British economist Maynard Keynes was that in order to have a well-functioning capitalist system, that it necessitated government spending and that pump priming to kind of get the apparatus rolling along. So this is sort of what you could call what we're experiencing, the military-industrial complex, is the sort
military
of...
Military Keynesianism.
Yeah, military Keynesianism, or I was going to say Keynesianism on steroids.
Right.
So... why doesn't it work well? Because here, you've got money being spent. I mean, it's taken from our taxes. It goes into the Treasury. Then the government spends it, $500 billion a year, on military goods. Well, there's workers. There's, supplies of, apparatus. I mean, why shouldn't this work as a transfer of wealth?
Well, that's a very good question. Military spending works under certain conditions. In other words, it works as a jump start, as an injection of purchasing power into a stagnant economy under certain circumstances. Specifically, under conditions of a slow economy, of a recessionary situation. Under those circumstances, the private sector retrenches and stay put. In other words, it does not expand or invest, and therefore it creates unemployment or aggravates unemployment. So under those circumstances, an injection of purchasing power into the economy by government spending, which, by the way, does not have to be military spending. In fact, non-military public spending could be more effective. But because the ruling elite does not like to spend on schools, on bridges, on basically public works projects, as we did in the immediate post-World War II period, and instead they prefer military spending because military spending benefits them more. So at any rate, under those circumstances, an injection of purchasing power by government spending, whether military or non-military, will boost the economy. The problem that it is not working anymore because is that what is true in the short run as a short-term remedy does not carry or does not hold in the long run, because if you repeat that, if you continue that drastic increase in monetary spending, eventually it's going to come into conflict with your other priorities. It comes at the expense or at the cost of neglecting both your physical infrastructure as well as your social or human capital or infrastructure like education, health, nutrition, and so on.
Which we see is happening all across the country.
That's
here in
exactly
Michigan.
What's happening.
Here in Michigan as well.
That's right. You know, our physical infrastructure is suffering drastically because of military spending and neglect of infrastructure. For example, there are a lot of people who argue that Hurricane Katrina and the destruction of New Orleans was as much a policy disaster as it was a natural disaster. Likewise, in the case of the collapse of that bridge in the Twin Cities in Minnesota.
Sure.
The critics make a similar argument that there are tens or hundreds of thousands of bridges nationwide who are in need of repair, but there is no money because money goes to, to Iraq, Afghanistan, and over 800 military bases overseas.
Raymond, let's say that number again. I think that astounds people. How many military bases does the United States have outside of this country?
Officially, it's about 800, but it is much more. Because by definition, if a military installation or entity is valued at less than $20 million, it is not counted in this figure. Yes. And so unofficially, it is much more than that. But even the Pentagon authorities acknowledge that nobody knows the exact number, really.
Well, Professor Hossein Zada, I think you bring this out in your book, The Political Economy of U.S. Militarism. We're talking about a massive wealth transfer here, right? Because when I pay taxes, when you pay taxes, all of this goes to the government. Then there's got to be a political decision as to how it's distributed. Well, I know in the suburbs of Detroit, not just in Detroit alone, which is in just horrible shape, there's classrooms that have as many as 35 students. As you said, the physical infrastructure, I've read, needs tens of billions, maybe hundreds of billions of dollars to put it in the shape that it should be. So there's a political question. Well, I'm asking too many questions compounded. The first is it in fact this transfer of wealth from us to the elite? And secondly, it is a matter of a political choice.
Well, exactly. And as I alluded to earlier, the reason that the decision makers, the policy makers, the ruling elite uses public spending for military rather than non-military public works project is that because military spending serves as a mechanism, as an insidious roundabout way to redistribute national resources in favor of the wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I said, currently, 58 cents out of every dollar of discretionary budget, that is the entire budget except Social Security and Medicare, 58 cents or 58% goes to the Pentagon, and only 42 cents go to everything else. So this is, in essence, usurping and draining resources from everybody and giving it to a handful of arms conglomerates.
Well, I put it in much more cruder terms. I say it is a system of institutionalized looting that the Commonwealth, the money that all of us earn at work, is essentially looted from us, and rather than returned in an orderly way to provide for what we need, it's essentially a racket that winds up enriching the wealthiest.
Well, exactly. That's why I call these recent wars of choice reflections of domestic war over national resources. You know, in previous wars, for example, in World War I, the marginal tax on higher incomes went up as high as 90%. But now, the wealthy not only does not pay its share for the war, but on the contrary, as they increase military spending, they also give themselves huge tax breaks. And that's why we see that in recent years and decades, increases in military spending have been accompanied with a further lopsidedness of income distribution. For example, for this fiscal year that just started, President Bush has proposed and the Congress has approved a 10% or $50 billion increase in the Pentagon budget. And this does not include the cost of war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, to make up for those $50 billion increase, they have targeted 141 social spending programs, either to be cut or some of them altogether eliminated.
Wow.
So, and this is and therefore it's not surprising that, for example, when they talk, when the president and his co-thinkers want to give the wealthy big tax breaks, they say, oh, everybody benefits from tax breaks, right? Well, statistics show that as a result of the 2001 tax breaks, as a result of that tax break in 2006, the people who make more than $1 million got $180,000 tax break. Those who are in the bottom 20%, they got an average tax break of only $20.
Let me just interrupt, though, because we're almost out of time, and I wanted to get this question in, identifying the problem in your wonderful and, I think, important book for people to look at, The Political Economy of U.S. Militarism. None of the major candidates are talking about this, are they? In fact, some of them, even on the Democratic side, are talking about expanding the military.
That's right. That's unfortunately, that's the case. The only exception is, of course, Dennis Kucinich,
right.
But he's pushed aside, basically ignored. Well, the reason that no candidate, no president, no politician can do much about this is because issues of war and military spending are beyond one person, really. You remember that, for example, Jimmy Carter went to the White House as a doll, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he left the White House as a hawk. The reason is that the Pentagon forces presidents to situations that they have no choice but to be belligerent and jingoistic. For example,
we're going to have to leave it without an example. I think that if people want to get a full sense of this, want to understand how daunting this problem is and how it affects each and every one of us, best place to start is with Ismail Hossainzadeh's book, The Political Economy of U.S. Militarism. It's published by Palgrave Macmillan, and there'll also be a link to it on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. Professor Hossainzadeh, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
It's Saturday. You and your wife take the boys to the mall, straight to the food court. Your wife and Pete head for tacos. You and Danny want Chinese. You look up at the menu for a few seconds. You look down to see what Danny wants. But you don't see Danny. Your eyes dart around frantically. You instinctively call out,
Danny! Danny!
From the taco place, you hear a voice.
Hey! Dad! Change my mind!
Every parent knows that feeling when, even for a few seconds, you lose sight of your child. Imagine if he or she were actually abducted. Go to wirelessamberalerts.org. Sign up for free Amber Alerts on your cell phone. When an Amber Alert is issued in the areas you've chosen, you'll receive a free text message. If you spot the vehicle, the suspect, or the child described in the alert, call 911. Sign up today at wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help.
This message brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
With election fever in the air, the good citizens of Metro Detroit are making their voices be heard. It's not about the left party or the right party. It's about partying up all summer long with Kid Rock and the Riff. Now, all summer long, 101 WRIF is hooking you up with the all-access pass to Kid Rock out at DTE July 19th, 20th, and 22nd. Here's what you do. Just pick up a WRIF Kid Rock for Summer campaign sign at upcoming Riff events. Display it proudly on your lawn or make your own sign. The bigger the better. The WRIF Kid Rock for Summer campaign team will be out and about scouring the Motor City for your sign. Display it prominently because you could win big. Keep listening to 101 The Riff for more details on how you could win big all summer long with Kid Rock and 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks. That rocks. Rocks.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Cyber crew members, you could win a trip for two to the NASCAR Brickyard 400 in Indianapolis, or other great prizes like a Sony Bravia LCD flat panel TV with home theater system, or an autographed Dale Earnhardt Jr. diecast. Log on now at WRIF.com for details on how you can hit the Brickyard this summer from Amp Energy, Energy for Whatever, and 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Saturday night. Saturday night. Radio Fiona's out.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. I'm Taylor Robinson. Thanks for spending your morning with me. You just heard KISS, Detroit Rock City. It's the best city on earth. And now here's Detroit's own Kid Rock, I Am the Bull God, on the Riff.
Like a train, I roll hard, letting off much steam.